Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by Winamp. Subscribe to TWiT and all your favorite podcasts with the ultimate media player. Download it for free at winamp.com. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 275, recorded November 21st, 2010. Angry Pigs. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToAssist Express. If you're in tech support, solve problems fast with a leader in remote support software. GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit GoToAssist.com/TWiT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to Audible.com/TWiT2. And introducing Metatropolis Cascadia, the sequel to the award-winning Metatropolis, narrated by an all-star cast from Star Trek. Download a free story from Metatropolis to find out how Cascadia began at audible.com/meta. And by Ford and the new 2011 Ford Edge. It grabs attention as well as it grabs the road and features available My Ford Touch to connect you to your vehicle in new and innovative ways. The 2011 Ford Edge. Drive one this week at a Ford dealer near you. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show that covers the tech news of the week, and which is why it's called This Week in Tech. And here he is, ladies and gentlemen, one of the original, actually, I have two of the original Twitters here, Mr. Kevin Rose of Dig Nation.
Hello.
That's your camera right there, right straight down. Ahead of you. Yeah, yeah. Say hi to the people.
Hello, people.
Hello, people. Also with us, David Prager was the first Twit was recorded in April 2005 at the 21st Amendment Brew Pub, and you were there, right?
Yeah, right after Macworld.
But you know who's never been on Twit before, and I'm really thrilled to have her right now, Zadie Diaz.
This girl right here.
Yeah, this girl. Which two thumbs? What is that? The two thumbs have never been on Twit.
Right here.
Yeah,
two
right
thumbs.
Here.
So good to meet you, Zadie. I feel like I know you so well.
It's great to be here. I know all of you guys through many various kind of places. So it's really, really awesome to be here finally.
When did you start doing videos on the internet?
2004, I started as a video blogger. And so through that, got hooked up with Rocket Boom as a correspondent and then started doing our own show, which at that time was called Jet Set. And then it turned into Epic Foo.
Love Epic Foo. And you're no longer a Brooklyn girl. You're now in the L.A.
Yeah,
area.
I'm in L.A. five years now.
It was Brooklyn. The Jet Set show, right?
The Jet Set show.
Yeah, I remember that.
What a great show that was.
It was fun.
You're really a pioneer in this business.
Yeah, I remember actually when we first moved to L.A., we were teaching people how to video blog in the Apple stores. That's how far back we go.
Before Dig Nation?
That was a long
time. It was a long time ago. Yeah.
It was a small, it's still a small world now, but back then, I mean, there was Jet Set Show, and there was like Ask a Ninja and Tiki Bar folks, and like maybe a handful of others, but it seemed like that was almost kind of it.
Yeah. Tiki Bar's gone. Ask a Ninja kind of came back. iTunes. He did a few shows. Kent's been doing some shows.
Yeah, we've all been kind of coming back and forth. I think a lot of the first people kind of got burnt out a little bit. You know, there's that burnout rate that you go through where you're just always online. And I'm sure you guys know, you know, it's kind of, you have to take a breather, reevaluate it, and then kind of come back.
Well, I think part of the burnout is if you're doing this and you've been doing it for a long time and you're not making any money at it. And it's like, I give up, but you gotta hang in there.
Yeah, if you love it, you hang in there.
You do it because you love it. That's always what I told people. They say, well, how do I make money at this? I said, if you're asking that question, you're in the wrong business because it's not. You don't do this for the money. You do it because you love doing it.
Yeah, that's so true. That applies to so many different things.
It tries to everything,
I see a lot
really.
Of entrepreneurs ask me the same question. They're like, I think I'm going to make millions of dollars doing this. And it's like, you're probably not. So
right.
You make sure that you really love what you're doing.
Right.
Like, you got to be happy making 50 grand a year doing this.
Right. That's good. So even for entrepreneurs who are looking for a big exit, that's still the thing to keep in mind.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember, I mean, when Dig was starting out, I was just thinking, like, as long as I can pay my rent, if I could do this at home, that would be so much fun, you know, to be able to work on that site at
then
home.
Then you know you're in the right business.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was a really good, you know, those what is that company, that website where you do the funny videos? They did the Apple iPhone versus Android. The woman comes in there. They look like little Japanese cartoons. They did one on entrepreneurs.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah. I am going to make $1 million.
You've got to play that. That's amazing.
I'm going to try to find it. If I could find it, I don't know how to.
What was it on? It was on TechCrunch.
Maybe it was on Tech. But wait, yeah, good luck finding something on TechCrunch. They do 40 stories a minute.
I know.
It scrolls off so fast. All right, we're going to put Kevin to work. Here's his chance.
I suck at this kind of stuff.
Wait, is it one of those animations where you make the little characters talk?
Yes, yeah. You make the characters talk.
Chat room. You remember that one? And it's the one on Extra Normal. Thank you, Gunnar.
Extra Normal.
But there's a lot on Extra Normal, too. I don't know if I'll be able to find it by just going there.
The chat room will find that. They're good.
My kid's humanities teacher, that was one of the assignments, is take some text from one of the books they were reading. And put it to make a movie out of it with Extra Normal. I thought that's pretty impressive. That's pretty cool.
There we go. We got a link. Leo, bam, YouTube.
We have a link. Bam! All right, we're going to play it.
No, this is the iPhone 4 versus HTC.
Yeah, we've seen that one.
This is a new one.
This is a one that's same idea, but it's, you know, I am going to be an entrepreneur.
Right.
It's pretty profane. I probably can't play it. You know what happened to me? Now, that you explain this. I don't understand that. Maybe, Zadi, you would understand this. We use YouTube. We put our videos up on YouTube. Why not? I mean, that's where the audience is. It's probably not a huge revenue for us, but it's something. It's video. Well, we just, Sarah and I do a show called iPad Today. We just put it up. YouTube put it at number 20, pulled it down for inappropriate content. Now, we've been blocked a lot of times for copyright violations.
Did you take your shirt off again?
I don't think boxers are inappropriate content. But, no, I was trying to figure out what it was, and we did show.
Now, did they pull you down, or did they pull it down because more than one person complained that it was X, and then they have a default that says.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, and so YouTube will pull something down because, you know,
they
more than
watch
three
it.
People have complained about something, and they can complain
and
about it
for no
whatever
recourse.
Reason.
It's like the Barry Brigade we have at Dig. Like a bunch of people get together, and they all, and all of a sudden it
But
comes
at least
down.
You or Dig, this is, yeah, I have, there's nobody you can call you can at do. Google. There's nothing you can do.
No, you kind of get swallowed up. It's literally like if more than three people flag you. It's kind of frustrating.
So
especially
that makes
if
me.
You know that there's nothing wrong with your video.
Yeah, there's
did
not.
Did you get it back up on YouTube?
How do you get it back up?
Well, you appeal. I mean, I know you know.
Who do you appeal to?
You know some people there. You have a
You appeal to a Python script.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Support.py. Help
but
me.
You have a publisher account, though, right? You have like a hardcore account.
It doesn't mean anything.
They don't give you priority support
Hell
or anything?
Hell no. You get nothing. Mm. I'll tell you what it reminds me a little bit of Facebook. It's the same thing with Facebook, which is, Facebook's great. And if you're a business and you have to have a page on Facebook, but I always tell people, but don't count on it because if Facebook, for any reason, could pull it down, and who are you going to complain to? They have 500 million users. What are you going to do about it? So, I can't really complain. YouTube's free. It's given us a lot of free bandwidth. So
it's got to be hard for YouTube at that scale of users to be able to support.
Yeah,
something
I completely
like
understand that. It's just a little bit frustrating. You know what I think it was? There's a new iPad game from id. Have you played this yet? Rage HD.
Oh, I saw the demo for this.
It's awesome.
It's just a demo, right? It's not a full.
No, it's a full game now.
Oh, it's out.
It's out. And
what
let me tell. I'm going to have to pull it out here. Obviously, I have to show you because
you have the thickest iPad case I've ever seen in my life.
You still have your Dodo case, right?
That's because I don't want my MacBook Air to feel bad, so I have a nice thick.
It makes it feel more like it's you know.
You know, one of the things YouTube also does is that people probably realize if they have songs that are copywritten, it'll automatically get picked up by some algorithm that works the same way as like the likes of a Shazam will work, and they'll recognize that there's a copywritten song and pull it down. However, if you are one of those people that does, like, say, a lip dub of something and you put the entire song, or you do a recreation of someone else's song and you do your version of it, YouTube has the relationships with most of the larger recording studios where they will put ads on that.
I love
and give
that.
The money not to you, the creator. Like, so if I go sing a song of someone else's, I get nothing. And even if it gets seen several million times, now who will get money is the studio that owns that song. So YouTube.
Well, remember
JK deals.
Wedding Dance, right? Mm-hmm. Where the people came out dancing, and it was a Chris Brown song, I think it was.
Oh yeah.
And so the studio that made the song, instead of pulling it, which they could have done, or cutting the audio, which they could have done, said, "All right, we'll just put an ad there." It went back right to the top of the chart,
which is good. Yeah, but a lot of times now, by default, those songs will get recognized automatically, and
it's automatic.
Based on the deals that YouTube already has with certain recording studios, they will basically put the ads on there and give that money 100% to the studio. So you as the guy who's doing a version of that song. You just have to be knowing that it's someone else's song.
We've
and I'm willing
Kevin.
To get the views, but the money's not mine. Because
we're not
going to
get Kevin back.
How
now.
Do I shoot?
Over the
down in the lower right.
Oh,
there's
see.
Also ways around that also with the music. Awesome. Isn't there that where you can speed up or slow down and you can't, it can't be detected as easily. So I've heard kind of like
all kinds
kind
of plays, ways to game
yeah.
the system.
The graphics
on this thing are amazing.
So this is id, the guys who did Doom, and they made it for the iPhone. It's 99 cents on the iPhone, $1.99 for that game with high def graphics on the iPad.
You know what's funny? I feel like shooting like this going.
I know. There is a game where you're controlling a World War II anti-aircraft gun, and you
guys want to play?
You're passing it around. Hey, congratulations to our friend Jay Adelson, who I know is watching. He has a job,
awesome. So
that's exciting. You know, we interviewed him a couple of weeks ago. We do a thing at 4 o'clock on Wednesdays. Tom Merritt and I interview a big name, Gary Vaynerchuk. Your friend Gary's coming up Wednesday.
Oh, awesome.
To interview him. But we interviewed Jay, and he said being an entrepreneur is addictive, and I'm trying to come down. My wife's helping me get this monkey off my back, right? And he said, you know, the excitement of it, because we were talking about Dig and the highs and lows and the nerve-wracking nature of it, which he says, no, but that's, I love that. I'm addicted to that. Did you feel that way or was
it
stressful?
It's there's a lot of fun. I mean, I think that the thing that's stressful is...
pull the mic up a little bit.
Okay, sorry. I think that it's, should I put the headphones on too?
Yeah, you don't need to. Okay. You can hear me, right?
Yeah, I can.
I'm sitting right across from you.
It's a lot of fun, but it's definitely, you have to be willing to kind of give yourself some time to reset, because you can go really hard for a couple of years.
I think that's what Jay was doing.
If you just plow through the entire thing. So Jay took a couple months off here, or several months, like 4 or 5 months before
he's
started his next
it.
Thing. He's back at it. I'm going to kind of do the same thing going into the holidays here. I'm going to take a couple weeks off and just kind of let myself just... Well, I haven't had a real vacation.
I'm going to take 2 weeks off!
Well, I'm just... you need it because you get
you
really
do.
Stressed out.
You need
out.
2 months off, though, dude.
Yeah, I wish I could do that, but we'll see.
So Jay got a job at...
Simple Geo.
Which is what?
It's a geolocation, like, storage company. So essentially, if you're building something new, like a Foursquare, Gowalla, whatever, you need to build out a new type of architecture to or back end to support that.
So it's infrastructure for these locations. See, that's
location-aware data is different. It's not like storing it in a standard like MySQL database and you're all good. You have to go from a point and then go out from there. And so in order to query that type of data...
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's a different type of database that they use. And I don't know, claim to know all the kind of hardcore stuff that they do. But essentially what they're doing is they're creating layers of data. So you'd be able to go in and say, okay, here's a pinpoint. Let's say this particular office here. Show me around this area all the Flickr photos. Show me all the Foursquare check-ins. Show me all the Gowalla stuff. Show me the temperature of that day, that time and day.
Place.
So they're doing a bunch of different stuff. So if you have anything that's location aware, it's like the S3 or EC2 for location stuff.
I think about who made the money in the gold rush. Some miners did, but mostly it was Levi's because they sold the pants and the picks. That's where you make money, right?
Yeah. That's what they're betting on, so we'll see.
You sell the stuff that the... So, you know, who knows who's going to win? Foursquare Places, let's go Gowalla.
Right.
But if you make the data that they all need,
You're
guaranteed to win. Joe Stump started that. He was a Dig engineer, yes?
Yeah. So Joe's a Dig engineer. A bunch of ex-Dig people, like 4 or 5 of them over there.
Cool.
It's awesome.
Let's see. News. Steve Ballmer throws a chair at effing Google. I love it when Steve loses it. I think this is one of the best things that Steve does. A reliable source, this is according to John Battelle, passed along a legal document in the ongoing lawsuit between Google and Microsoft over Google's hiring of Kai-Fu Lee. The document is the declaration of Mark Lakowski in the case. Lakowski was a distinguished engineer at Microsoft who defected to Google in 2004. His statement makes for some pretty interesting reading, to say the least. The statement reads in part, "Prior to joining Google, I set up a meeting on or about November 11, 2004, with Steve Ballmer to discuss my planned departure. At some point in the conversation, Mr. Ballmer said, 'Just tell me it's not Google.' I told him, 'It's Google.' At that point, Mr. Ballmer picked up a chair and threw it across the room, hitting a table in his office. Mr. Ballmer then said, 'Effing Eric Schmidt is an effing p-.
I'm going to effing bury that guy. I've done it before. I'll do it again. I'm going to fracking kill Google. He then spun around, his head exploded, and he fell over.
Fracking. He was a Cylon.
He was a Cylon.
This is awesome.
This is 2004.
Wow.
They're still waning, Mr. Bomber. Is it like that, Zadi, in the internet TV wars?
You'd be surprised. It's very much like this.
No.
It's actually quite civil, it seems like, anyway. It's still that small community that's not making that much money, so we're all very friendly with each other at this point. I think that when you do get to the point of Google and Microsoft, your head does tend to explode a little bit more rapidly than probably, you know, if you didn't have that much to lose.
You said the key thing. None of us making any money, so it doesn't really matter. At this point, the stakes are low.
The stakes are low. That makes for very friendly people. But I could understand the frustration behind, you know, having an employee that you probably find really valuable, you know, all of a sudden leaving to go work for your competitors.
I think Jim Louderback threw a chair at Eileen when she left Division 3, didn't he?
Eileen's the awesome.
Yeah, we were very glad to get Eileen.
I mean, I wish
actually, Jim called me up and said, "Stop poaching my employees." I said, "It's just Eileen."
I hear her laughing out. Eileen also lives how much closer here to here? I guess
she moved closer. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. We're kind of in the middle of nowhere.
And so now Eileen and Tom work together again because they work together at Tech TV.
Well, they are, I believe, hitched in holy matrimony. So it really doesn't. Zadi, are you and Steve an item?
We are. We're married.
In holy matrimony.
We are. We've been married for a couple of years, but we've been together for a really long time.
Steve Wolf, of course. Now, Steve, besides producing your shows, he also works at Blip TV, right?
Yeah, he's just started being the...
Are we all supposed to pause?
Yeah, we're all should freeze right now.
Just freeze. Wait until she comes back.
That's polite. That's the polite thing to do.
Like, just hold your hands.
And you're doing, like, the whole peace sign. Live long and prosper.
And there she goes.
So, you're talking about having...
Whose idea was it to build a business on Skype? Oh, me!
Oh, we've been trying to do Skype stuff between LA and New York last week. It's just a pain in the ass.
If somebody can find an alternative
to
Skype...
You need to build your own.
Like our own software? Yes. Lipe? Leo Skype?
Lipe.
Lipe.
It's not that hard. You know, Steve Gibson.
You're trying to reach is currently unavailable. Please.
Steve Gibson, I'd have to get a British lady to do all our announcements, though. Thank you for calling Leo Lipe. Leo's not here right now. Steve Gibson was going to write something like that. And then he said, oh, Skype does it fine. Well, maybe we should get back to work.
You probably do more video conferencing to a studio than anyone else, I bet. Like, you know, CNN does a bunch of people that Skype in nowadays because you can
see the benefit in having nobody has the Skype-a-saurus, which is four Skypes. Great. When Colleen built that, ESPN called her and said, how did you do that? We said, it's all on the blog. We don't hide anything.
But you don't do the 3D imaging into the studio like
that. No, I don't. That was
CNN. You remember
CNN.
That? Right?
CNN, you're trying to reach.
You know who did that? Well, you guys wouldn't know him, but...
David Borman.
David Borman. Yeah. Do you know David?
Yeah, because he consulted with... when they built the Tech Live set.
Yeah, well, he did... Yeah. Exactly. He did... well, that's right. He came by. Because he was the guy who did Ziff Davis's first...
And I remember
first...
they also blamed him when Bloomberg decided to make their TV screen. The actual TV was the upper right corner, and the rest of it was stock tickers and lower third chasing headlines. There was a tiny little corner up there, and everyone was like, blame David Borman.
That was Borman. Yeah. Nice guy, David, actually. He had... He, she should be back. She's back now? Okay. Eileen's amazing. No wonder you were mad. She just fixes Skype. She just can't.
You know, you should use her. But last thing that she was doing at Revision 3 when she left, because you're talking about how you don't want to necessarily have a show that covers just Android or just iPhone or
she's doing app she
was,
judgment.
Yeah,
I
so
know.
She was producing it, but then she was so good at it and was so involved in it that she just, you know, she was talent for the show. And
no, I've already told
her. There's no reason not to have her.
Actually, talent. I haven't told her yet, but I'm going to tell her.
Yeah.
Because we were going to, I'll tell her later. We were going to do it. Hi, Zadi. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened there.
Oh, it's cool.
You forgive me?
I think it was my fault.
Oh, did you push a button?
No, not at all. I just dropped out.
Yeah, Skype, you know. What are you going to do? Windows, 25 years old.
Crazy.
Yesterday was the 25th anniversary of Windows 1.01. Paul Theriot had a
picture on his blog.
I have Windows 1.0.
You have? Oh, you never opened the box. So
you donated it to the...
No, I did not donate it.
You lent it to the Computer History Museum.
And it's on display right now, sealed Windows 1.0.
It's sealed.
It says, like, on loan from Kevin Rose.
Isn't that great? So what, you know what? It's going to be like a bottle of wine that they open and there's nothing in it.
Right, totally.
Sand. Kevin said
I shook it around and I could hear the discs, five and a quarter floppies.
This was basically, at the time, it was just a shell on top of DOS. I mean, it wasn't even, it was just a program.
Well, what did you, I remember I used to use Norton Commander or NC Small, so you could just go up and down like your file directory. And then for multitasking, because you couldn't do it before,
Norton
I would use like,
not during Desk View.
Desk View.
I used Desk View. Desk View. And then
Zadi's way too young to remember any of this stuff. Zadi, what was the first operating system you remember using?
My first computer was a Tandy.
That's pretty good. That predates Windows. That's good.
And then I went from then from that I went to an Apple IIc to Apple.
So you're older than you look.
I'm actually 86
you
years
start,
old.
You started when you were one.
Yeah.
25 years old. On the one hand, 25 years isn't really that long.
Something long. Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, in computer terms, it's a long time.
Do you remember using it soon? Because I remember specifically not using Windows in a way, the same reason that I was embarrassed to, like, maybe use something like AOL. Like, no, I'm not going to use Windows. That's like the.
It's too slow.
And it was for all, like, the noobs in a way.
Well, it was just really slow. Like, when Windows 3.1 was out, if you had, like, a 386, it was like, DOS is faster. I could change directory to any directory I want, execute any file I want to run.
I didn't use Windows until Windows 95. That was like the OS 10 moment for me. Like, I never used Mac OS.
So you don't remember? Do you remember going in and
editing? I
remember
using 3.1, but I never not really, really wanting to.
And did you edit your autoexec.bat and config sys files?
Oh, hell
yeah. All the time, yeah.
Okay. You have to.
You have to get the memory. And so you'd rim out some stuff.
EMM 386,
you need a little extra,
memory,
you'd go and rim out a couple things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure,
that was funny.
But I didn't really use Windows until 95. I remember using it occasionally to run certain things or to check out what was going on, but I never really adopted it until 95, which is crazy because that's only 15 years ago. No,
Steve was there, by the way. Steve Ballmer was here. Here's a little promotional video for. I think this is for Windows 1.0.
How much do you think this advanced operating environment is worth? Wait just 1 minute before you answer. Watch as Windows integrates Lotus 1-2-3 with Miami Vice. Now we can take this Ferrari and paste it right into Windows Right. Now how much do you think Microsoft Windows is worth? Don't answer. Wait until you see Windows Right and Windows Paint and to listen to what else you get at no extra charge. The MS-DOS executive, an appointment calendar, a card file, a notepad, a clock, a control panel, a terminal, a principal,
a RAM driver. Amazing.
Can you believe it? Reversey! That's right!
Reversey. But it didn't have solitaire yet.
How much did you guess? 500? 1,000? Even more? No, it's just $99. That's right.
That seems pretty pricey.
Yeah, it's like $300
probably. It's Windows from Microsoft. Order today. P.O. Box 286 DOS. Except in Nebraska.
You know what? Wow. You gotta love his enthusiasm. I do. I think it's great.
He's sweaty and desperate even back then.
Jeez. Like, I mean, I still think the fact that a guy would go up on stage and be talking about developers the way he was with that kind of passion, I think is awesome.
He's a salesman. He's what you would look. Go ahead.
He reminds me of Crazy Eddie.
You remember those? Oh yeah, he was doing Crazy Eddie. He's insane. Here in the Bay Area, we had Tom Campbell, Top of the Hill, Daily City. He was a fast talking dude. Here's another one. This is also from the Supersite for Windows, Paul Thurrott's blog, winsupersite.com.
Oh, I've seen this one. This is
so a female executive in a suit, circa 1985.
This is like a song, right?
Oh, isn't that really bad?
Options, just a moment.
This isn't that really bad one, is it?
Nielsen, Barrow, and Chang.
A lot of them are.
They're so bad.
I'm sorry, he's in a meeting. Research.
Oh,
morning, Catherine. Any calls?
No calls, but Mr. Payne said be sure to give you...
Now she's from the Bronx. She was from Tennessee a minute ago.
Did he, say what it was?
Are you kidding? When he's around me, Payne acts like everything's a secret mission.
I gotta skip ahead to where they start singing. because you can see it's Mission Impossible.
Because this seems like the kind of stuff that you would create now, because you can put it on YouTube. You can see the long form version. They never put this on TV.
No, you know, I think they show it at the partner meetings, developer meetings, stuff like that.
Switch into communications. Auto.
This is Windows 1.0. Horrible. By the way, 16 color screen. That's part of it, right? 640 by 480.
Now Perkins.
Look how productive she is. When is she going to start singing?
And paste it in.
Well, she's got that. I remember that mouse. You remember that mouse?
Yeah, the original Microsoft mouse.
Starting to sweat a little.
Remember when the curved Microsoft mouse came out and everyone was like, ooh, it has a little curve.
Ooh, swoopy doopy.
Remember that? It was like a little bit slightly curved.
Because the first one looked like a bar of soap.
Yeah, that's right. And then the hockey puck from Apple. Remember the IMAX?
I have one of those. You want to see it?
Uh-oh. Yeah, let's see it.
Remember the hockey puck?
I haven't seen one of those in forever.
This is like the Computer History Museum, the local version. And then we got a verbatim
five and
Data
a
Life
amazing.
5 1/4. That's not even the floppy. That's the cleaning floppy.
Oh, man. Oh, how funny.
Apple USB mouse. Yeah, this is when they had the balls.
Oh, we lost Zadi again.
Uh-oh.
Oh, Zadi. Twitter CEO's reaction, Dick Costolo. Do you know Dick? You must know Dick.
I know Dick, yeah.
Seems like a nice guy. I didn't know he's an improv guy. He's like, he must be funny. Is he funny?
I haven't heard him crack any jokes.
Okay.
Wow, the mouse works.
Of course it works.
It's awesome. It's weird to feel a ball moving around.
Yeah. We haven't had balls in a while. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while since.
I remember that it was the oldest little joke. You take the ball out of the person's mouse, they come back, and they wouldn't be able to move their computer.
Really easy to fool, huh? All right, let me call Zadi again. It's terrible. It's the...
Where you take a screenshot of their desktop and make the image their desktop.
So, Cheng Jianping, first Chinese citizen sentenced to a labor camp...
The person you're trying to reach is currently unavailable. Please
next time use LIPE, the first Leo Skype. Cheng Jianping, 46, believed to be the first Chinese citizen sentenced to a labor camp for posting on Twitter.
For retweeting and adding a sarcastic comment.
She was sentenced to re-education through labor for accusations that her retweet of a message led to her disturbing social order. She used her Wang YIO9 Twitter account to repost a tweet from her fiancé. The original message, I'll tell you, the original message was anti-Japanese demonstrations, smashing Japanese products. That was all done years ago by Guo Quan. The original tweet read, "It's no new trick. If you really wanted to kick it up a notch, you'd immediately fly to Shanghai to smash the Japanese Expo Pavilion." And then she retweeted it, adding, "Charge, angry youth. You're going to jail."
Wow.
Aren't you glad we live in a country where you could tweet crap and not...
I thought Twitter was blocked in China.
It is blocked.
It was when I was
there.
It's
blocked in China, except obviously you can proxy around it without much trouble. So I think a lot of people use it.
So she got in trouble for proxying.
No, well.
And the content.
The content got their attention.
The intellectuals have been doing that for going around it.
Has the Chinese government, I guess it's not their job to give an official word on why they arrest anyone?
They said it was for inciting angry youth. So Dick Costolo, who's the CEO of China, I can understand why he'd get a little angry, tweets, "Dear Chinese government, year-long detentions for sending a sarcastic tweet are neither the way forward nor the future of your great people." Good on him.
Yeah, seriously.
I agree.
I'm sure the State Department called him immediately and said, "Hey, dude, you can't do that." But good on him. Somebody's got to stand up.
Yep.
Appalling. Let's take a break. I'm going to get Zadi back.
The person whom you're trying to reach is currently unavailable. Please leave a message.
If we keep this up, we're going to have to pay that Skype woman royalties.
Why don't you get, Telepresence to sponsor and give you some of that stuff? You need to get it to everyone.
You know
what
we got? I should.
Cisco, that's it.
Yeah, we got this. Yeah, hand me the Yumi.
I'll let you know when Zadi's back.
Okay.
This thing is like, what, $600 or $700?
Oh!
Oh, shoot, you do have it.
Yumi!
Oh,
Yumi! It's amazingly clear and lifelike. Maybe we should send this to Zadi. Bring friends to your living room on your HD television. Be together at the touch button. Well, we bought it just because we wanted to see. Hmm. Oh, you bought it? Cisco has any? Yeah, I buy everything. If Cisco has any secret sauce. Oh, God, Kevin, you're strong. Did you get that from me?
So you put that on your TV? Why is it so heavy then?
I don't know. Maybe the TV, maybe it comes with a TV. It ought to at the price. All right, we're going to get Zadi back in just a bit. Before we do, I would like to mention my good friends at Citrix. They make a good product, a great product. I don't know if you remember, Kevin, we used this from time to time on the screensavers to we would reach into people's computers and fix them. They've come a long way since then. GoTo Assist Express is now the number one remote solution worldwide. That's according to Frost and Sullivan. They're an industry analyst group that focuses on this sector. Because it's easy to use, it's affordable, it's secure, 128-bit SSL, which means that your support E, for instance, can be a Starbucks. Doesn't matter. They're protected. And I really like this. You don't have to pre-install software on your customer's machine. So I've done this with my mom. You know, she's,
I do with my dad.
Yeah, she complains. I say, okay, here's the link. Click this. 30 seconds later, you're in because it's awesome. Very fast.
It's especially nice when you don't have a PC, because my dad has a PC.
But you're a Mac.
And I'm a Mac. And I'm like, how am I going to go in and
works
help
on
him?
This. Works on the 11-inch.
Right, exactly.
It's amazing.
That's what I use it for.
Go to Assist. I'll tell you what. You can try it on your machine right now. Go to assist.com/twit. You get 30 days free. Things like 8 sessions at once, unattended sessions. You can get an assay of what software is running in the background. It's just really fantastic. Go to assist.com/Leo. Give it a try. Hey, if Kevin uses it, it's got to be good.
It's pretty easy.
Zadi is back. Good. Let's try it. Is Zadi on like maybe a 3G or something?
Who's your ISP here?
Yeah, man? This is
sure
on.
I'm sure you rock solid, but.
Yeah, who knows? Zadi, hey, what are you? Who's your internet service provider? What's going on there?
I just unplugged the router and plugged it back in. I'm not sure what was going on there.
Don't worry about it. We just did a commercial. You think of it, look at it this way. You missed the commercial.
All right.
I like how she thinks. Aw. No, we use something called Ethernet to the First Mile.
Oh, nice.
Which is, it's a Sonic Net. It's 9 megabits up and down.
Ethernet to the First Mile?
EFM. It's awesome. Hmm. But you know what's funny? Because a new building that we're looking at moving into is right next to the telephone office. So we're going to get really good service.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Really good service. All right. How many of you have been groped lately? We talked about this last week. Doctor, mm-hmm. who wears baggy clothes, got fondled at the TSA, and he was really upset about it. Hmm. You know that
sucks.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't mean to laugh at Odakta. After I laughed,
what it sucks for? Not Odakta, the poor guy who had to feel him up.
So when did there was a specific change that went into effect? Like,
yes,
last week.
Last
right?
week, so, they put these new scanners that see through your clothing. There's two kinds. There's an X-ray backscatter, which is potentially harmful because it's X-rays, mm-hmm. and there's a millimeter scanner, which is low frequency. In fact, they say it's less radiation than your cell phone, so that's probably okay. But you can turn it down. But if you do, they do a very intrusive frisk, which includes
So you have two options. You have, we're just going to scan you naked, or we're going to just grope you. Almost.
Right. And there may be health consequences to this X-ray. I mean, it's an X-ray.
Oh, really? So I didn't
know
the health
X-ray.
Consequences.
Well, you can ask the TSA guy. We found out. Ray Maxwell found out. You can ask the TSA, and they will say, because there's no way of knowing otherwise, is it? So when you go up, and by the way, Wednesday is National Opt-Out Day. We'll talk about that in a second.
Because of the fact that the thing's
Yeah. You go up to the TSA, and you say, is it X-ray or millimeter scan? If they say X-ray, even the pilots' associations are saying, don't do it.
Mm. Because they're the ones going through every single day.
They go through every day.
Yeah.
Remember when you fly, you're exposed.
There's a lot of frequent flyers who fly multiple times a week. Right.
Don't they get a lot of radiation just by flying in general?
Yeah, flying, you're higher and you don't the cosmic rays are hitting you.
I can see. Well, I mean, but you're encapsulated inside of.
Oh, they say it's still.
Really?
No. Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I mean, I know that like UV rays don't go through most car windows. Even it's got.
I don't think it's UV though.
It's not UV. It's cosmic rays from the sun. It's particles. So you heard about Adam Savage. He was at Woodstock, Seattle.
I take some strange things home in my laptop bag from work, as you can imagine.
He's, of course, from Mythbusters.
Before I get on a plane, some of those things are not only esoteric and potentially dangerous, but also expensive and hard to find. So I go through my laptop bag every time I fly to make sure nothing nefarious gets on there, except today. And I'm going through the TSA checkpoint, and, you know, they're doing the thing where they're yelling at you while you're doing what they're yelling at you to do.
Oh, I hate that, don't you, where they say, take your laptops out of the bag, take your shoes, put them on the belt. They seem to take great pleasure in that.
So what did he...
The scanner, they put me through the body scanner, which makes, for some reason, my penis feel really small.
It's called shrinkage.
And then I get onto the airplane, and I look and I notice that I brought this thing with me. Two 12-inch long steel razor blades.
Right through the scanner.
No way.
See, well, I'm glad he talked about it because it just goes to show how much of
this
the stuff
do
just
crap.
It works and doesn't work. Someone posted an article, I think it was Barrett Lyon, who talks about, I mean, he has the fortunate chance, he started Big Gravity and a couple other companies. He has the fortunate opportunity to be able to, like, fly on a private plane frequently. But one of the things he noted is that, like, you've got all these private jets and all these private airplanes, some of them pretty darn big, where there's no security whatsoever. And it sounds like, oh, it's a rich person complaining about a rich privilege, but not really. It's going to show that, like, there's...
If you're a terrorist, get a G6.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you can get in. I mean, it's almost a double standard on what you're protecting for, because you're not going to be able to screen or protect anyone who's flying a large. It's still not going to stop anyone from flying an airplane into something.
I had friends who just last week flew on a private plane. No search, no custom. They flew across into Mexico and back. The custom guy gets on. He says, "Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Okay, see you. Have a nice trip." I mean, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
It's so ridiculous because it's not consistent even throughout country lines. You get searched here, and then once you're, you know, in Europe, it's completely a different way of searching. So what is? I had a friend only a couple of months ago who was able to go through a souvenir pocket knife that he had, forgot he had had in his backpack and went through. So.
And they took my nail clipper the last time I flew. I'm not kidding. They took my nail clipper. Like,
that sucks.
I don't care. It's a cheap nail clipper, but still, what the hell? They were worried about not the 12-inch razor blade, not the pocket knife, my nail clipper.
Yeah.
What am I going to clip you to death?
What does El Al use? Because they've been flying forever.
Okay, this is a great question.
They've never, ever had a problem. So we talked with Ray. They're the ones that are targeted more than
anybody. Absolutely. We talked with Ray Maxwell on the radio show just today because I said, Ray, would you do some research on this?
El Al, which is the Israeli
in Israel
airline.
This is all they do. They interrogate you. But they do. They have military officers who sit there. They look in the eye and say, what are you up to? Where are you going? And it's very effective. They've had no incidents. You know why we don't do that? Because these are highly trained people.
Yeah.
It's slower. It's more expensive. But it's effective.
Well, what was it again before the TSA? It was employees of the airports or employees of... Because it was before there was no Department of Homeland
Security. Before 9/11, you had a... Right. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cheaper to train TSA agents as opposed to implementing all these new kind of machines?
Yeah, these devices are $110,000, $150,000.
Because sometimes you see, like, how many people are yelling at you about taking your laptop out. There's like five sometimes that are yelling at you to take your laptop out, and they're just yelling you to go through the procedures of using the machine. Maybe they could train them. I don't know what the overhead is and all the economics around it. But.
So do you take your iPad out? Because I don't.
No, you don't have to. It's not a laptop. And apparently the Air, really? You don't have to either.
The Air, you don't.
They said you don't have to. Oh, there goes Zadi.
I take...
Bye, Zadi. Have a nice trip.
So I there is since this change.
Yeah. Well, this Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, and this is what Odakta was encouraging. I'm not sure I'd encourage people to do this. It's National Opt-Out Day, in which you say, "No, I'll take the frisk, please." And he said, "Do it in public because it's humiliating to them as well as you, and everybody should see this happening." Mm-hmm. Civil disobedience. What do you think?
I'm all for a solution. So I'm not going to, I don't want to hate.
Bruce Schneier calls this security theater.
I don't want to hate too much.
No, it's
but
not
I
there.
Still, I can still, I identify the fact that it's not very, it's not the most effective way to do it. And it's not the best way to do it. It's just causing
And it's intrusive.
Problems.
So there are a lot of TSA Twitter feeds, but none of them, according to TechCrunch, are actually a TSA except for this one, TSA blog team. This is where you can get quick notes and updates concerning the TSA blog. Remember Blogger Bob? I don't know if he's still around.
I mean, as long as they can't capture pictures of your junk. Like,
oh, that's an interesting
question.
Don't, can they?
I really don't care. If I'm going through and somebody really wants to freaking take a look at, you know, your goods, like,
they
as long
say,
as it's not the radiation. I don't want to do the radiation
right.
stuff.
They say the that they don't. But here from Gizmodo is the U.S. Marshals in a Florida federal courthouse saved 35,000 images on their scanner. These are all images of people. Now, this was a lower quality scanner, so these are not particularly revealing, but they saved them. They say, the TSA says, say, we're not going to save any of them. That's exactly what the federal marshals said.
You know what? Mm. I bet you these were saved. These were not deleted on accident, I bet.
Yeah, of course not. It's just like, the, it's like Google.
They want to delete them. It's just like it's so much overhead to like, oh, shoot, we got to go through
right.
and delete
Supposedly
this.
Supposedly these don't survive.
Deleting everything.
Yeah.
And then they got to, you know, secure delete because, you know, all they're doing is telling the data that it's not there even though it's there.
Kevin, you're a fashionista.
Fashionista?
Look at that Slayer t-shirt he's wearing.
Yes.
That's awesome.
I do like Slayer.
Have you seen the new boutiques.com?
No. I have not.
Oh, yeah. This is a beautiful site for people who love to shop for fine fashion wear. You know, it's kind of social. It's neat. You can find somebody that you like, Ashley Olsen or Mary-Kate or Jennifer Goodwin or a variety of movie stars, and see what fashions. I bet Daria would like this. Jamie Lynn Sigler from The Sopranos, Eve, Anna Paquin. Love her. Sookie Stackhouse.
And then it just lets you follow that person?
You can follow. You can see what fashions. Just look at this site. Isn't that beautiful? Take a wild guess, Kevin. What company owns this site?
A wild guess? Guild Group.
Take a wild guess. Who owns this boutiques.com? Maybe if we go...
I would say for the font choice, probably Bloomingdale's.
Bloomingdale's. I mean, that's good. Those are good guesses. Let's just go to the help page. Maybe the help page...
Leo Laporte owns this.
Boutiques.com. And it's not coming up. I'll tell you who owns it. Google owns it.
No really? Way.
Google.com.
Wait, oh, so this is all because Google's all algorithm-based. So basically they're using the same kind of thing that Amazon uses where you can take a picture of something and it tells you what it is and where to buy it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's as far as I could tell, you cannot buy stuff on boutiques.com. You're just following people.
Oh, see, they should link to where to buy the stuff. They got to make it so you can.
Well, maybe you can. Let me see. Save, share, love, hate. Maybe I can. Maybe Google gets a percentage. It's really there. We go. Here's the Rag and Bone, the Indigo Corp. Boy, I like that.
Add the bag.
There we go. Maybe I can buy it. Wait a minute. I got to select the size, 2 or 4. I guess it's not for me. Email address. Yeah, sign in. I guess you can buy it.
Huh.
So that's a clever, isn't it? You think Marissa Mayer did that?
I don't know.
That seems like
she's in charge of location-based services.
Is there a guys section for this, or is it
no?
Just, okay.
Can you believe that?
Now I feel bad for saying that Google is employing an algorithm that searches everything. I guess it's just women.
There she is, ladies and gentlemen.
She's back.
I'm telling you, Time Warner Cable in LA is not the most.
No. So we were talking about boutiques.com. Have you seen this site? I didn't want to be sexist, so I did it while you were gone.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, this is a shopping site for women. And you follow, you can explore the boutiques, celebrity boutiques. You can follow a celebrity, see what they like, what they wear. You can buy it. This is what Anna Paquin wears, this lovely Rag and Bone Indigo corset dress. And these fine...
I think that would look good on you, Leo.
Frequent baker. Well, no, they don't have it in my size. It's only size 2 and 4. So... I was saying, who do you think? Now, that's taken us to Barney's, so I would then buy it in Barney's. But who do you think owns this site? I did it to Kevin. He didn't know. It's Google.
Really?
This is a new Google site. Isn't that interesting? Did you follow the Google security hole that allowed?
No, but I heard about this.
Yeah. TechCrunch did the story on this. I don't know.
What's the deal?
So, a guy created this... website that exploited this hole. Google has fixed it. Google hasn't said anything about it. But let me see if I can find the fella's name. Vahi G. He's a 21-year-old Armenian. He created a website which is now down. If you went to the site, it would say, oh, hi. And it would then, if you were currently logged in, if you had the cookie for any Google account, It would then send you an email at your Google email address just by going to his website. So in effect, he was able to harvest your Gmail address just by visiting his site. I'm sure there are a lot of websites that would love to know how to do that.
Absolutely.
Google says they fixed it. Vahi says they've never talked to me. I wanted to tell them about this, but they never said it contacted me, so I put up a site. Google says the issue is resolved. We fixed the issue in the Google Apps script API that could have allowed for emails to be sent to Google users without their permission if they visit a specially designed website while signed in. We immediately removed the site that demonstrated the issue and disabled the functionality soon after. Little bug.
Google's
there.
Been pretty good at keeping things secure.
You think so?
I feel as though like my Gmail's never been compromised. Like all my stuff is pretty.
Felicia Day's got hacked this week.
Is that a password? Like she had too easy to guess.
She probably had an easy secret question, something like
right,
that.
Right, exactly.
So here's the thing to remember. I'm sure you all have done this.
Tie it to your cell phone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Done what?
Tie it to your cell phone so you can reset your password via your cell phone.
So what they got was her backup email account, and they got that too.
Yeah, see, I don't do that.
And so she couldn't reclaim the password because she didn't have access to her backup email account.
Right.
But they also allow you to set, and everybody who has Gmail right now, to go to Gmail, go to the security settings, and attach a cell phone to it. Because unless the person attacker has your cell phone, I mean, if they have your cell phone, you're out of luck. But as long as you continue to have possession of your cell phone, you can send the reset code to your cell phone and get them out of your system.
Right.
So do that now if you haven't done that. If Felicia had done that, she'd be okay. I'm sure she's done it now.
Was this also because there were kind of third-party apps that kind of were tied to this, like Facebook Connect and all of that? I mean, how...
You know, initially they thought it was a Facebook Connect exploit.
Right.
And then I think that they're now saying, no, it's not. I'm not sure. I don't know if we'll ever know exactly what happened.
Well, I'm still not sure how the exploit worked.
Like we don't know. We just know that she lost her account.
Oh, you mean the other? Sometimes that happens.
Yeah. Oh.
The other one.
I mean, you're logged in, so you've got...
It's kind of like FireSheep. You ever play with FireSheep?
Mm-hmm.
That's a fun one. So FireSheep, so you don't have to keep re-logging into, let's say, Facebook every time you change pages. It sends you a token that identifies you uniquely. The problem is it sends that token, unless it's on SSL the whole time, in the clear. So FireSheep is that Firefox plugin that sits there, watches the tokens flying around, grabs them, says, ah, Kevin's on his Facebook account, David's on his Twitter account. I have it on here. It's really quite fun. Mm-hmm. In fact, you notice
Did
we have
you
a
password. FireSheep me?
No, because you notice we have a password now on our open access. That's why we put it on.
I need to install FireSheep. That scares me.
Oh, it's so much fun. It's highly illegal, but Kevin, nobody would ever arrest you.
Actually,
hey, you're the one that told me to install it.
System. So you put it on. It's really cool. It shows you all the people who are logged into the services it supports, which is quite a long list, including WordPress.com. Then you double-click on their it shows their pictures, too, so you can look around the coffee shop and say, oh, she's cute. You double-click you're now in her Facebook account. You can post messages. You can look at her pictures. It's as if you're her because you stole her token.
Wow.
And from Facebook's point of view, you're her, still logged in. This is not fixed yet on Facebook. It is not Google. It's one of the reasons I think Google put HTTPS on all Gmail.
Arrington wrote that that Facebook would consider this a feature.
Yeah. Makes it easy to log in.
Crazy.
Another story, I think. Go ahead, Zaddy.
No, it's a good point. I mean, sometimes I forget about how many different apps I'm kind of logged into at the same time until I kind of go back and check and I forget.
Ooh, I want to see if it worked with Dig, actually. I think it did, as a matter of fact. Jesus. Did you know that? It works with Dig.
Idea.
Yeah. As I remember.
Well, it's just, it works with anything that's unencrypted.
Well, yeah, the guy who wrote it only supported, it's Code Butler, CodeButler. .github.com or .net. I can't remember what GitHub is. maybe he's not here. If you Google Code Butler. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that Dig was one of the... You wouldn't know about this. This would be... You have people who do this, right?
Yes, I do not.
Yeah, all that security and stuff is all handled elsewhere.
That is correct.
Yeah. Let me just see if I can see which services it supports. Oh, well, we'll worry about that later. Here's a story you might like, Kevin.
Yes.
Google offered to buy Twitter for $2.5 to $4 billion, and Twitter laughed. Not nearly enough, they said. In fact, the offer was characterized as, according to the Business Insider, insulting.
I don't think $4 billion is ever insulting.
I can't imagine being... I'd love to be insulted like that.
Seriously.
This was about 3 months ago. Now, this is...
Because there was a rumor that Twitter is raising another round at a $4 billion valuation as we speak. That was a rumor. It's right. Nothing that I know.
Right. How much is Twitter worth, you think?
It's... If Facebook's worth 35, Twitter's in the... $4 billion-ish kind of range.
I think that's reasonable. Yeah. Because it's about a quarter the size of Facebook. They have about, what, 125 million users?
I think it's over 200.
200 now?
Something like that.
All right, so it's bigger than that.
And most of them are active, right?
I don't know.
Ah, see, that's the question.
I know that Facebook's very active. They said 50% of their user base comes back every day, which is
every
crazy.
Day? I thought it was more every week anyway. Like,
no, I'm sure it's every day. I go back every few hours. And I don't even have a Facebook account.
I thought you just started it up again.
I did. I had to. How can you cover Facebook if you don't have an account? You can't cover it. So as much as it hurts me to do so.
Do you have two accounts? Do you have a fan account as well?
No, I have a real account and a page.
Do you do you use Facebook for its original intentions?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, because I think you get more. I think there's a lot of people, and I would have almost thought that you would have been one of those people that just accepts everyone.
No. I did initially. I had 5,000. Now I only accept hot chicks. That's the original. I believe that's the original use.
That would
be
amazing if you click on Leo's Facebook page. It's just like 500 really hot chicks. Like, just...
you know, I would, except these hot chicks never asked to be my friends. I don't know. No.
I'd be like, damn, Leo's a baller. Look at this. Like, shit. It's pages of hot chicks that are his friends writing on his wall. And
let me just actually, you know, that's a good question. I don't know who my friends are.
See, I never know if it's you. I get a friend request from Leo like every couple months, and I'm like,
you never know. In fact, Sarah did that. She said, "I know Leo doesn't have a Facebook account. You're not Leo. Go away." And then I said, "No, it's really me."
Wait, are you the Leo that looks like?
I'm the one that is. I'm on a ball.
You're
Peter Griffin.
Yeah, Peter Griffin. Leo.
You only had one ball pop or two?
I've had two pop in my life.
That's the most amazing. Who drew this for you?
Isn't that great?
I would kill to have something like
that. I can get one of those for you.
That is amazing. Have you
it
seen
just looks just like me.
Oh, yeah. I even commented on that photo. Did
it
you
looks
see?
Just, yeah, it looks just like me. That's then my son got on my Facebook, and he said, let me take a picture of myself that looks like I'm stoned and put that as your profile picture. Does he look high there or just?
Wow. Your son has gotten so much older. That's insane.
I know.
How old is Henry?
He's 16. Last night,
your daughter's in college now.
He comes back from the Andre Nicotina concert across the street here. It's a big Oakland rap star. And
how's your relationship with your son on Facebook publicly?
Oh no, I have no relationship. He won't let me. He won't friend me.
Really?
Yeah. Oh no. Neither of my kids will friend me on Facebook.
Haven't you taught them how
you fire? They know you how fire to trap the them or whatever.
No, you know what? They're not that sophisticated. They log in on my system. And I've got the password saved, of course.
That's amazing.
Henry comes home last night after the rap concert, 1:30. He pokes his head in the door and said, can I have some friends over? Like 15 minutes later, there's 20 girls in our hot tub.
Oh, those are all your Facebook friends.
Yeah, all my
Facebook friends. You're like, don't mind if I do. Did you crawl into the hot tub and hang out?
That cleared him out real quick.
Yeah. Seriously.
Daddy's here. No, I didn't, but I was like, keep it down, guys. The cops are going to come. They were having quite a party.
That's cool.
That's a
cool
great news story.
Like
I'm not cool. I'm not a cool parent.
Cops shut down
that.
Rave at Leo Laporte's house in Petaluma.
Yeah, that's good.
So where do you draw the line? I mean, it was a weekend.
Somebody was started lighting up some weed. I said, give me that. And
you're like, puff, puff, pass. What are you doing?
No. You know, it's hard. It's very difficult being a parent of a teenager. As you might imagine these days, it's not easy to know exactly how to handle it. I don't know. And we all talk. We parents talk about this. Let's take a break. Come back in just a bit. We're going to talk about The Office. They're doing a parody on Silicon Valley.
Hey, it's Ryan from Wolf.
Ooh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how I got woof on here, but I'm sure I'll find the... Why is this on there?
What is it?
That's the website.
This is the website? Oh, wait a minute. That's right. This is Ryan's website.
Oh, my God. I was fooled by it.
Oops.
Oh, my God. This is Ryan, you know, the
hey,
intern.
Ryan from Woof. Thanks for choosing Woof.com.
Whenever, wherever. Sign up now to get Woofed. Downloads. Want to edge your ride or fax it? Edge what, up?
Why was this in the... I saw this in the...
On the office.
Of stories that...
Yeah.
Oh, it was on the office?
Oh, dude, this I is, thought this, this is like someone sponsoring. Like, who's Woof?
I know. This fooled me.
Hi. I'm Rye, founder and your first friend on Woof.com. Setting up your Woof account is quick and easy. It's just a matter of a few simple clicks. So let's get started. Click on to File. Now open File.
Click File.
And now
file.
You'll see an option. Start Woof.
Start Woof.
Hi, I'm Ryan, founder and your first friend on Woof.com.
And then it says, due to high volume of woofers, we're able to start Woof at this time. It's W-P-H-F.
Now open File. And now you'll see an option.
Every time I do it, he starts over.
Well, that's a great job.
This is menu. Actually hysterical. I have to say, that's very funny. That's the NBC show, The Office. And he is actually one of the writers and executive producer of the show. But he's also the intern. Let's take a break. And we'll come back with more. Zadie Diaz is here from Epic Foo. Zadie.com or... what is the website for Epic Foo? How do I get
it's
there, Zadie?
EPICFU.com.
Dot com. And also Kevin Rose. He's I don't know what Kevin's doing. He's like, what are you, like a blogger, right?
A blogger. I have a blog.
What is your bio say on Twitter? I like tea and I climb rocks, right?
It says founder of Dig, tech angel investor, and I like tea and climb rocks.
How much angel investing are you doing? A lot?
It depends on, you know, I'd say probably 4 to 6 deals a year. Something
that's
like that.
Pretty good. And is it with a goal to make money or is it with a goal to help people out?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Path is your latest.
Path is the latest. Yeah. And, you know, so it's a hobby and it's fun. It's a lot of fun to see all these new startups.
I bet it
they
is.
Come out.
I bet it
Absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
And it's a big deal for them to have Kevin Rose on their list. I mean, you probably don't have to put up a whole lot of money. It's more just the presence.
Yeah, I think
that's
that,
a value.
Well, you want to put money in if you think it's going to be huge.
Right. The more you put in, the more you get.
Right, exactly. So that varies. But I think angel investing, typically most angel investors will do anything from like, I don't know, 25 to super angels will do 200,000 in an investment kind of thing. So
is Peter Thiel like the poster boy for all this? Because he's the guy Mark Zuckerberg came to and he gave him a few hundred thousand and now he has like 30% of it. $35 billion company.
Yeah, I mean, he's
that was a good move.
He's done well, but I think that there's, you know, the people that I really look up to, there's a handful of, who's some of the big angels out there that...
I don't know, I'm pretty good friends
Reid Hoffman is amazing.
I like Chris Sacca.
Chris Sacca is awesome.
He's a really smart guy, and I think he's really good morally and philosophically, which makes a difference, I think. And a lot of, like, he talks that up on his site. You read the about it at Lowercase Capital. And it's kind of inspiring, I think, to have someone, because a lot of the roles of some of these angels anyway is to try to be a mentor to someone as well.
Oh, for sure.
And then like, and also like, especially for you, I think that you got so much experience, but more so than that, as an advisor, based on like your skills as for UI and UX, I think can help a lot.
That's when I sit down with a new company. It's not just like they can take money from anybody, right? So it's not the cash, like mm-hmm. like you said, Leo. It's really more along the lines of like I'm launching something new. You know, help me not get screwed when I take my first round of funding. And I'm saying, well, you don't want this deal
because you've been through it all before.
Right, exactly.
You can kind of talk about it.
And you kind of come in as this independent guy who they know that is not going to screw them over, that just there to try and help them out. And that can apply to, you know, product features or raising capital or whatever it is they're trying to do. Find the right type of engineers. A lot of people have a hard time hiring good engineers. And that was one of the biggest hurdles I've ever had to deal with. So
that's a tough... That's where there's a lot of competition for,
absolutely.
For talent. That's tough.
So the Instagram guys are a great example. I went and had tea with them probably about a month ago. Yeah, Kevin and Mike.
Mike, that's right.
And I hung out with them.
There's
two of them, and they're growing like crazy. At the time, this was a few weeks ago, they were doing 2 uploads a second.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there saying, like, how do we think we know how we're going to scale this. But we need to get engineers that have done this before.
Right.
And so, you know, I hooked him up with a guy I know, a senior scaling engineer at Twitter, that came over and then sat down with him and walked
That's another
some stuff.
Thing. And you've mentioned this before, I find fascinating. People at Dig, Facebook, Twitter.
Oh, we all work together.
All work together.
Absolutely.
You would think they'd be kind of competitive, but no, it's like we're helping. Everybody helps everybody out.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's not to say that they're going to go work for that company, but they'll come in and spend an hour with them and sit
down. Are you all using Cassandra? Is that why?
No. Cassandra is good
Twitter
for certain
does.
Things.
Facebook does.
Twitter
Dig
does for certain things. Facebook only does it for, I think, messages.
High availability stuff.
They are more sharded MySQL still, Facebook is.
You're kidding.
I believe so. I think the bulk
I'm
of it.
I'm stunned.
Well, Cassandra, they forked it, though. They took it in another direction. The version of Cassandra that they're running is not the one that everyone else has access to.
Okay.
So they're a little bit different. Twitter only uses it for certain things. They don't use it for, all of the messages are not stored in Cassandra on Twitter.
They're Cassandra still, is a very high availability database that would be an alternative to, say, MySQL.
It's early days for that.
It's very new.
It's very new. It's buggy.
Dig uses it,
We
though.
Were using it. We've
Dig 4, that was a,
well,
wasn't that the
that
big
was part of we had some issues with it, but it's funny. One of the guys that started Cassandra sent me an email and was like, hey, you know, you're slamming Cassandra. Please don't do this, blah, blah, blah. And the whole thing is it's – there's certain things it's very good at, but you have to also pair the software with the right type of engineer that can debug it and figure out how to actually fix
those
problems.
Well, MySQL's like that too. If you don't tune it, it's going to be like a dog.
But it's a lot more stable than Cassandra is.
Right.
Or well,
they're both open source,
what we were trying to use it for. Yeah, they're both open source. Yeah. So anyway, it's scaling is not easy. Anyone can build a website that'll scale to, you know, a million, a couple million people a month. That's not hard. You get into 10 million, 20 million, 30 million plus a month, that's difficult, especially when it's a write-intensive application. It's not just reads that you can throw into a big like caching like Netscaler. Like, you need to have the right talent to figure out which direction to go, because there's 10 different solutions out there.
Right.
So, you know, like, which one do you choose and why, and it's hard.
David and I are going, we don't care. We're glad we're doing what we're doing.
No, I mean, no, I still I still remember that. Like, you know, I'm not a developer, but I still remember, like, I've been pretty, like, enmeshed in the whole thing for the past 4+ years, just into working with developers and dealing with developers and talking about people's and their startups and their scaling problems. And I still remember when you came to me talked to me about Dig and your first program, and you said, we knew we were growing so big when we realized that we were no longer building the site. We were optimizing queries. That's all we were doing is optimizing queries.
The biggest mistake I ever made at Dig when it comes to talent, without a doubt, is that I hired for skill set and not talent. The difference is that you can hire an awesome PHP programmer, a great PHP programmer that'll come in and rewrite your PHP, make it super optimized. And then when all of a sudden PHP is no longer the solution, when it gets to the end of where you can take it, they don't know how to jump to Python or C or a low-level language. They can't go up and down the stack like you'd want a developer. So we were sitting there at one point with 15, 20 really awesome advanced PHP developers that didn't know what to do next. And so we're sitting there like, we really wanted to rewrite this in Python, but we don't have a Python expert, or we want to do this piece in C. And so, you know, hire for the talent of the engineer. They can always learn a new language if they're a skilled engineer.
How do you assess for that?
How do you decipher between talent?
I hate to say it, but there's either a crazy rock star prodigy engineer that you have come in that you can just tell they're really good at jumping up and down the stack, or you hire people out of MIT, Stanford, whatever it may be, that have that background, that have that discipline, that you know are going to be able to make those jumps around the different languages.
So that's interesting. So it is important then that they have the training, the degree.
It depends. When it comes to algorithm guys, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's really hard to find someone that's really advanced algorithm engineer that doesn't have the formal training.
Let's take a break. Come back with more. Kevin Rose, David Prager from Revision 3, Zadi Diaz from Epic Foo. We're talking about the week's, really not even about the week's tech news. We're just sitting around BSing, which is really all Twit ever was. Just a bunch of people talking about what's going on in their lives. Right now, I'd like to talk a little bit about a great car, a great automobile. Now, I know Kevin drives a Porsche, but I drive a Mustang, and a little later on, we're going to have a little race out back down Petaluma's back streets. I just want to warn the CHP, stay away. I bet you can't drift in your Porsche.
If I turn off the traction control,
yeah,
yes.
See, I can drift like a mother. I sometimes drift. I don't even mean to.
So first it was like a rave got shut down at the LaPorte household, and then there's some drifting down the streets of Petaluma.
And it's all Leo.
That's pretty fun.
I'm the bad boy in Petaluma, let me tell you. It ain't my son. Now, I want to talk about the Edge. Actually, this is the most technological car Ford has ever made. Amazing vehicle. It starts with just the exterior. The lines are beautiful. Stuff you could only really do with the latest, you know, computer-generated designs. It's aerodynamic, gives it incredible gas mileage. You know, even though it's got that great six-cylinder, 3.5-liter TI VCT engine, which is incredible, the V6, 285 horsepower, and yet EPA estimated 27 highway miles per gallon. Best-in-class second-row legroom. It's just very, very spacious. Incredible interior. I really like the instrument panel. Reminds me actually a little bit of my Mustang.
This the one with the MyFord Touch?
MyFord Touch is so amazing. Behind the wheel, you've got two screens that are programmable. You can have a tachometer or, you know, variety of things. And then you get the big on the stack. You got the 8-inch screen. It's basically Ford Sync. I know you've heard us talk a lot about Ford Sync, but then it's the next generation with lots more stuff. You can get Stitchers on there, Pandora. You know, basically the idea is whatever your phone is capable of, your car can do as well. You guys are probably iPhone guys, but you know on the Android phone, it'll read me my text messages. That's when the text message comes in a robotic voice. It's kind of funny.
You have there.
This is Droid X.
Oh, nice.
And then Windows Phone 7 does it too. I'm a big Droid X fan.
Now, did you know that, I don't even know if it's in your copy notes about that car, but I think most cars with the MyFord Touch that have that feature built in also have the ability that you can, basically I could tell my phone to connect and then it would, the car would take my phone's internet and create its own little access point. So you'd connect to the car, so your passengers, instead of tethering to my phone, they'd tether to the car.
Wi-Fi.
The car would get the Wi-Fi from
Isn't that phone. Amazing? Yeah. 3G Wi-Fi from the phone.
That is cool.
Yeah. Two USB ports and an SD card slot in the car. I love anything that's got two USB ports and an SD card slot in a car. I like that. They also have the Sport Package, 305 horsepower, 280 foot-pounds of torque, and that sport-tuned suspension. Now, I want you to take a look at an Edge. It's got the ambient lighting, the capless fuel system, which I really like. You know, it's just really easy. All around, they've just designed a beautiful vehicle. It's the Ford Edge. You take a look, drive one at a Ford dealer near you, and do try the MyFord Touch or the Ford Sync in any of the Ford vehicles. They're really remarkable. The hands-free calling, the complete control of the audio, the climate system, all with voice, all without taking your hands off the wheel or your eyes off the road. They also have a 911 assist for safety. It's just a great vehicle. Drive one of this week at a Ford dealer near you.
I really hope this is how American cars get back on track. Like the fact
I think
that
it is.
Just be so.
I think it is.
Like have the techiest hardcore cars.
Well, I mean,
cars.
I think Ford never ever even declared bankruptcy, and they're doing.
They took
fine
no money.
And then
from the
even
government.
GM, they're back on track.
We own GM. That's the funny. That's the funniest thing.
But I think the government is actually liquidating.
They're going to get their money back. Yeah. I think. Yeah, they're going to get out of there.
So yeah, it all went according to plans.
No, I think all the American. As you know, I'm a Ford fan, but I think all the American car companies are showing some real resilience, which is important because that's really a big backbone of the nation's economy.
I wonder if the whole problem that Toyota had helped. And I mean, it was not good.
Oh, you
what
bet.
Happened, but I mean,
oh, you bet. You go into you after that acceleration problem. You go into a Toyota dealer. There's nobody there. Would you buy a Toyota after that?
I mean, in a way, it's like when something bad happens to a company like that, it's almost the safest. Like flying on September 13, 2011, probably the safest time to fly type of thing.
I don't think the day after they announced that there was a huge flaw and you might
have it.
The
day after.
The safest day.
No, but I'm saying like right now. I mean, right now and where they are right now.
Maybe now.
Because it's also like there's a lot of, you know, to manufacture an automobile, there's an immense amount of engineering to go into that before you go to mass produce. I think that it's been long enough for them to address things. That
yeah, figure out what
not.
The actual issue
is. All right, I'm going to get your blood pressure up. The Senate panel has approved the domain name seizure bill. The bill known as COICA, Combating Online Infringement and Counterfeit Acts. After a flurry of last-minute lobbying from representatives of the Motion Picture Association of America, the Recording Industry Association of America, the usual bad guys, a Senate committee approved the measure by a unanimous vote. Even the Newspaper Association of America was in on this one, which they said the legislation was needed because online piracy, quote, undermines the investments newspapers make in journalism, Labor unions say American workers have suffered significant harm during the theft of copyrighted and trademark goods. There was an ad in a newspaper targeting Capitol Hill signed by groups including Major League Baseball, the NFL, Nintendo, Viacom, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. So
what does this do?
You're going to love COICA. COICA. If copyright or trademark infringing websites.
Sounds like a drug, like a COICA. like a cholesterol drug or something.
By the way, a group of law professors on the other side say that the law is unconstitutional under the First Amendment, would set a dangerous precedent with potentially serious consequences for free expression and global internet freedom. The EFF says it basically is a 1950s-style Hollywood blacklist. The government decides which websites are legitimate or not. The government decides, do we cut these sites off from the internet? A website in danger of having its domain seized or having U.S. internet providers basically say, I don't know what that site is, take it out of the DNS. If it is primarily designed and has no demonstrable commercially significant purpose or use other than offering or providing access to unauthorized copies of copyrighted works. In other words, if it's the Pirate Bay, it doesn't exist. And the government decides it.
That'll never work.
Providing access.
Never work because people will get around. But you're talking about what the spirit of this
is. To get around it. I agree. It shouldn't exist in the first place. But if it did exist, people tweet that out in a second. Pirate Bay is now the Pirate Bays.
Yeah, but
Bay
isn't 2, that like
.com, Bay right. 3.
Well, that's right. A big First Amendment issue, though. Like, they shouldn't have to get that far anyway, right?
Right.
That's what the whole argument is. I mean, you shouldn't be able to censor anything without having specific definitions of what speech you're censoring, right?
Yeah, this is not surprising at all. I mean, I think this is why net neutrality is so important and why it's so difficult to communicate that, because once you start talking about net neutrality, kind of people's eyes start glazing over and what does it mean? But things like this starts happening really slowly and you don't even realize it because the language is so complex. Talking about this to like my grandmother and my mother, it's you have to sit down for a couple of hours to kind of go through it. It's such an important topic.
What really disappoints me is that a lot of the people on this committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, are people like Patrick Leahy, who is traditionally known and been very good about internet protections. Our own Dianne Feinstein from California, Orrin Hatch from Utah represents Novell, Russ Feingold from Washington, Chuck Grassley of Iowa, Arlen Specter, Chuck Schumer in New York. These are all senators who voted for this, by the way. I just want you to remember when, I guess it's too late, Al Franken voted to censor the internet. I think they don't understand.
They're saying that they can't take down these sites, right, because they're overseas or whatever it may be.
So they block them.
So they want to block them so that we can't access
them. Take them out of DNS, basically.
Yeah, that's
a domain name seizure bill. You know?
That's nice. Unbelievable. Have you I'm sure, Kevin, because you get all the beta of all this stuff. Have you played with Facebook's new messaging system?
I have not.
No.
I sent Mark an email saying, can I have an access early? And he said the only way he could do it is just add your name to that list, and then they'll automatically roll it out.
Oh, I love hearing
that. Unless
you
work at
the
company.
Huh?
Only way I can do that is if you go through proper...
Yeah, right. I mean, he told you that, which is great. I'm sure everyone he knows... And he's got, you're a good friend.
Is that Zadi? Anybody? Do you have it? Anybody have the new message?
Has it? I don't know if they're doing that. I think it's just internal thing right now.
It's only internal.
Although I did get that little message now that people are getting to add Facebook and add it as your homepage. So that's interesting.
So what you should do, I guess, right now is go to facebook.com/username and get a username. Because I presume that will be...
Unless you already have yours, right?
Right. I'm the Leo Laporte.
Who has Leo Laporte?
I don't know, somebody who's not the Leo Laporte. David Prager, it says here.
Yeah.
So you should get your name, because presumably your address will be whatever Facebook that is at Facebook.com, right?
Right.
Gosh, I need to get never got a new username. I'm Facebook.com/KevinRose, but that's my fan page one.
Well, that's okay.
Did you have, but that's not going to be my email address.
The Leo Laporte's my fan page.
So you don't have a personal one.
Right. Well, I do. What is it? I think it's Leo... I don't know.
Dude, I'm going to get another one.
I hate coming up with new email addresses.
Yeah, what do you... Well, first of all,
No subject line. I mean, it's messaging, not email. No subject line. Right. All the whole thread. If Kevin and I have a chat, a Facebook message, and then an email message, it's all the same.
I like the idea.
You like it?
I do like it.
Why?
I think it's cool because it's a unifying all of these little things that have always been like me having to be like, that was a conversation I had here, and it's not actually my inbox. And if they pull it off, forget that it's Facebook for a second. Let's just say that this is the way that things are going, and then maybe it's Gmail that launches something very similar 6 months from now that we
all
use.
Priority Inbox is a little bit like that, right? Although it's algorithmic.
But it doesn't follow me around, right? Like, I like the idea that I have my phone on me, and I want to have, like, if Prager says something to me on chat and I'm away from my computer, yes, I can have my AIM signed in here.
Now it's in there.
Now it's here. It's saved. I can respond back, and that's still an email that I can search later. It's like, I know Google kind of does this with Gtalk, kind of, because you can save your history and search it. And
I have Google Voice.
You can search your Gmail. You can find previous chats through people with Gchat clients. I just worry that it's going to make it that much harder to try and focus.
Because just more crap.
Well, here's the thing. The one thing that Facebook is pretty good at and that Mark is pretty good at is making things fairly usable and simple. Like their IM client is simple to use. Like if they can pull it off, and it's not like I have to think, like, did I sign into Gtalk and did I, you know. Right. If they can pull it off, it'll be pretty awesome. I don't know. I like the idea of it following me around wherever I go.
Do you think there's something scary? Do you think there's something scary in that, in having all your eggs in one basket?
My eggs are already in the Gmail basket. So if, like, Google owns my life right now.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either. I mean, I was talking to my sister about this, and it's so much easier for me to communicate with her on Facebook. She doesn't use email at all. So in one way, I think it's great. But I don't know how I feel about it yet until I actually use it.
Yeah, I was just thinking the other day, like if I had, like right now I have AIM and I have Gmail.
You
and I have
use
Skype.
AIM, really?
I use AIM still, yeah. Uh-huh. I have Skype.
You use AIM, you use a client.
I use a client that looks at AIM. I use ADM.
Most of my friends that I chat with on IM are through their AIM account, through their AIM chat account.
Right. So, but here's the thing, though. If I had something where someone was trying to Skype with me, say someone's trying to Skype video with me, I'm not at my computer, but I'm on my iPhone, but it ports it to FaceTime for me so I can have a video conversation. Or if I'm not on that, then it opens up a chat with that person. Like, that's kind of cool because it's like, you know, it figures out what device I'm on and then translates it to the appropriate
protocol. Is part of the Facebook messaging to be a conduit? Meaning, like, so you still have all your Gmail, you just get it through your Facebook thing?
Not.
Or do they want you to start using KevinRose@Facebook.com?
No, they're saying that, like, if the person isn't on Facebook and they send you an email to Facebook, it turns into this type of conversation, right? It doesn't look like an email. It's just a conversation you're having with someone, right? And if you happen to be on your phone, it appears on your phone. If you happen to be online, it appears in your browser. And, you know, it kind of follows you around. I don't know.
Isn't the problem that email's broken because it's just too much? It's out of control.
That's the main thing. Hold on. Okay. The main thing for me is that I go to my Gmail and I have, you know, a couple thousand unread Gmail messages.
Yeah, me too.
If this will follow me around to where I can deal with it right away, then I won't have that problem.
Well, you need a BlackBerry.
Don't you think that problem will just follow you over to your iPhone?
Well, if I deal with
it's
it right away,
it's just
going
to pollute your phone now.
No, maybe I just need to disconnect.
You have to pick and choose when you want to be interrupted by things. Because I do think that there's something to be said for, you know, focusing on the tasks that you're doing and then deciding whether or not, okay, I'm going to deal with the messages that I'm getting. Or if you're out walking around, you don't mind, you can turn that on. And then the other thing is that one of the things that Mark Zuckerberg said was that email is too formal, but in a way it's become so damn informal that that's part of the reason you're getting inundated with too much stuff. And
it's too easy to send an email. This just makes it easier, doesn't it? I mean,
right.
I guess he wants to make it faster to deal with it because you have to open the email sometimes, depending on how you have it set up.
And Mark's interesting.
Delete it or archive it or respond to it or whatever.
I have to say, I think the social network is the best thing that ever happened to him because he's now much more face forward than he used to be. He's leading these events. They're doing a lot of events. They're being very aggressive, doing a lot of stuff. And I think he's kind of stepped up and he's quite impressive. He seems like he's very, very smart and really thinking about this stuff in new and unique ways. What's scary, though, is Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, right? It's him.
Yeah.
All the ideas are his. And he's got 500 million users. That's a lot of power for one guy. He said, Facebook's blue because I'm kind of colorblind and that was the color I could see. This guy has a lot of power. What do you think? Is that obviously you respect him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a brilliant guy.
Is he listening to people like Bret Taylor, the new CTO?
I don't know about his... Bret, I know Bret pretty
Bret's pretty cool.
Yeah, Bret's really cool.
He came from FriendFeed. In right. fact, you see a lot of FriendFeed in this messaging system.
You see a lot of FriendFeed. I mean, FriendFeed developed likes. So, like, that translated over. But, yep. Yeah, I think that, you know, he likes to debate things out, and he likes to think big picture. And I think he's just really good at kind of looking at this and saying, like, okay, 6 months from now, I think this is where things are going and doing them slightly differently, you know?
He realizes
the power of the graph.
We are in a very interesting time. The angel discussion we had a minute ago, I can't think of another time where there's been this kind of creative foment, and then there are people like you and a lot of people like you with a little bit of money and a lot of advice to help fund this, and then there are people like Mark Zuckerberg who can just, I mean, I cannot think back to it. It wasn't Bill Gates. I can't think of another time where one person's ideas had expression to half a billion people.
Yeah, it's crazy.
In this way. I think it's unique. It's unique. I don't think you can, you know, Edward R. Murrow, the early days of mass media, I don't think anything is like this. This takes mass media to the next level, and it's not just national, it's global. So it's, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's impact is not just inside the U.S. as CBS or ABC was. It's everywhere. It's all over the world. Does it scare you, Zadi, that there's that much power in one person?
I mean, I think Mark is genius, and I love just hearing the news that's coming out of him. But I think it is interesting how he takes a 360 approach to it, so that now, you know, when you open your browser, your homepage will be Facebook. Now your emails, forget about them. They'll all be integrated into Facebook. And so it seems like we're returning to, you know, AOL 1995, where we're going back into these small villages that are kind of, you know, in and out of themselves, you know, their own thing is outside of the internet. So I don't know how I feel about it. I'm a little conflicted about just living within the Facebook world and that being everything and kind of that being my entryway to the web. I'm still waiting to see how it pans out. There's something uncomfortable right. about it.
It makes me uncomfortable that there's so much power in one person. On the other hand, I celebrate the fact that, just as Larry Lessig said in his review of The Social Network in The New Republic, he said, I celebrate the fact that a guy didn't have to ask permission. He just did it. He didn't have to ask Harvard. He didn't have to ask anybody. You know, he just said, I got to. And because I guess he's a genius and was able to kind of tap into this raw nerve, instant success. I mean, truly instant success. Here's another way that we live in a brave new world. Look at this. This is a Kickstarter.com is a website where you can go if you want to raise money for an idea. You don't have to go to a venture capital. You don't have to go to an angel investor. You go to Kickstarter.com and say, well, that's what the diaspora people did at the beginning of the year. A bunch of NYU students say, we want to build an open Facebook. If you pledge money and we raise enough money, we will do it. They raised hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. Here's a really trivial example. Scott Wilson is a product designer. He has a studio called Minimal in Chicago where they create stuff like the Nike Presto watch, the Uba bassinet. He worked on Xbox Kinect. He went to Kickstarter and said, look, I want to make a wristwatch that you can attach your iPod Nano to because it's got a clock on it. If I get $15,000 pledged, I'll do it. He's got $262,000.
But why did they overraise?
Well, everybody who wants to participate can do it. It's funded.
So once
you pledge, you have to give the money if he makes his goal.
So who has control of like the product revenue?
He does.
He does.
So you don't get any kind of the revenue by pledging.
You don't get an investment, but there. Look, see, if you pledge a dollar or more, you'll funded be able to buy it. If you pledge $25 or more, and by the way, whoever sets the Kickstarter site up can do this, you'll receive a kit, which will sell for $35 at retail. Pledge $50, you'll get more, $70 more. Zadi, have you ever thought this would be a great way to launch a show? Is just put this up here and say, if enough people want this show, I'll make it.
Actually, a lot of people are using Kickstarter now in LA in the web series community. I'm seeing it all the time. I think it's a great way to fund independent projects that people may be interested in. A lot of documentary filmmakers are doing it, and people that contribute money get producer credits. There's another site called Indiegogo, because the difference between Kickstarter and Indiegogo is like, if you don't meet your goal on Kickstarter, then the money that's contributed, it all goes back to your credit. Nothing gets charged.
Right.
But with Indiegogo, if you contribute, it doesn't matter if you don't reach your goal, you still get the money that was contributed. So there are two ways to go about it. But Indiegogo, that model of self-funding is really has really helped a lot of producers and a lot of creators and people that just generally have a lot of amazing ideas.
This is why I get so excited about this Brave New World. So here's a guy. He says, I want to do a web series about an a cappella group in college. And if I can raise $1,000, I'll do it. He's raised $1,570 on Indiegogo. So, and you know, he put a little video up here. It's like Glee,
so
an independent Glee.
To pitch to people to send money for him to do a project.
Yeah.
They're just sending to him because they think, oh, that'd be really cool. I'd like to see you be able to do that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Have you heard of Quirky.com?
Quirgi?
No, Quirky. Quirky. It was started by a guy named Ben Kaufman. It's for like people who want to be inventors of more tangible hard goods. So if you want some people to help you on the design from everything from a logo to the industrial design of what the engineering of the product would be, you go there and you submit your idea and you ask people to jump in and not volunteer, but give you those ideas. Like, I need a logo and people will be working on that. I need a way that I can fit a battery into a corner somewhere like this, or I want a level or a certain work.
So exciting.
And so Quirky. I think they've been around for a while, but it's really neat because you can come up there with an idea. It's like, I wish I could make a widget, but I don't have the wherewithal to mill the plastic. I don't have the wherewithal to do all these different things.
Daria's doing that right now. She's doing
it's really neat. And so I think Quirky, I thought when I first heard of it, like, that sounds like a great idea in theory, but apparently it's actually in practice, it's working. They're putting out products every week.
And then they do a revenue split with those people, right?
So based involved on how your level of involvement is, you'll get that back.
It's awesome. Yeah.
So you're giving up a lot of, you know, you're owning your invention and you're deciding what parts of it you want to give away to other people to contribute.
What a wonderful democratizing force this is. And you couldn't have it without the internet. So it's really the internet is what powers this. It's the ability for us to all gather together and make things happen. I think it's incredibly powerful.
That's why we have to make sure it stays open.
Hell yeah. Hell's yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Hell's yeah.
Hell's yeah.
So here's a little scary Facebook story. A debt collector went after a Florida woman. Mark One Financial had its employees harass her and her family members on her Facebook page. So they went and they, in a papers filed with a Florida court, she's asking for damages as well as court intervention to stop Mark One Financial from using the social network to contact her and her relatives. This is maybe
can't she just change the privacy features?
About 2 months worth, or a little more than $720. She said her finance company, Mark One Financial, offered to defer payments, but then another unforeseen event.
I don't know why they would go on Facebook and contact my family.
A collections agent from the finance company, posing as a Jeff Happenstance, befriended Beecham on Facebook.
If they can't find you, it's easy to pull up a Facebook account and see that you have a Facebook account. And then they have the information to go and possibly call you at work, call you at home.
And call you on your cell phone. Beecham claims she even received text messages up to 20 in a single day, all traced back to Mark One Financial.
Probably shouldn't friend people you don't know. I mean, but people do that all the time, don't they?
Yeah.
Mark Happenstance, I think I'll friend him.
There was a story on This American Life talking about how people use social networks to go after people to collect money and how they pretend to be things and where the legal line is on that, which hasn't been too established yet because people haven't been doing it.
Right.
So how you can,
it's brand
new. If you don't answer your phone call because you think it's a debt collector, don't respond to an email because you think it's a debt collector. Yeah. There's other places where you're, you know, living your life that happen to be online.
Right.
Then where is the line drawn? Can they try and contact you on social networks? Absolutely. Can they pretend they're someone else? And that's where the line is on whether you can or can't.
Hmm. Right.
Because a lot of these debt collectors, I mean, they're working almost some of them as freelancers. They say, hey, someone owes you $100. If you can collect 100 of it, just give me 40 or 60. And that's what people do.
Who takes that job? Somebody who doesn't like people.
Oh, yes.
I hate people. I want to get them.
You know, there's people
working deadbeats.
The problem is that people aren't trained to, because when you get a call from a debt collector on the phone, you know that, you know, how to react to that. But a lot of people aren't, you know, skilled at figuring out how to react to people that are contacting them through social networks. So what's the protocol there? So because it's not a regular thing.
Just friend your friends.
Don't friend your people. That's what I tell my kids. You can friend anybody if that you know them in real life, but don't friend them if you don't know them in real life. Who knows who they are?
Hey, so I got a very quick story from this week that since Apple's such a popular topic. So what did you think about that, you know,
Beatles.
There's everyone loves it when Steve Jobs says, oh, and one more thing, and that's when he introduces the product. And
right.
So I haven't really seen him hijack their homepage to such an extent that they did.
Wow, that was amazing.
Said, tomorrow will be a day that you will never forget, is basically what they said.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think people knew because they knew what it would
be. It was a Paul McCartney quote, right? Yeah. Tomorrow... What was it? I can't remember. But
and
it
that's
from
why people
a,
knew what it was.
McCartney
but I almost
song.
Thought, I thought, I almost felt like he was crying wolf a little too much.
Yeah, but they didn't hold a press conference. They
I
just,
know, they just, you know, they just dropped it. Maybe it was fun. I mean, I guess ultimately it doesn't matter. Steve Jobs can, I'm sure it was him who decided, yes, let's do this because no one else would.
He loves the Beatles. He was very excited. But I think there was a little bit of a backlash from the press saying, come on, dude, you can't say this a day you'll never forget. And all it is you could buy the Beatles on iTunes.
Yeah.
Well, everyone knew it was going to be an iTunes thing. I was actually excited. I was hoping that they would overhaul this iTunes software. Meaning, like, anytime I love opening, I like going to, like, you know, podcast homepage on iTunes or a TV show homepage or an artist. But it's so slow. So when I see the link, I'm like, is it going to open in iTunes?
It's not. Yeah, exactly.
Really? And,
it's awful.
And even the default, at least on the Mac, for opening an MP4,
it's
you can tell
an Apple script for crying out loud.
Instead of opening it in QuickTime, it'll open it in iTunes. I know I could change it, but whenever I click on an MP4, it plays it in iTunes. I'm like, it's going to play it in iTunes.
Don't launch iTunes, whatever you do.
It reminds me of, what was that music match? Remember Music Match?
Music Match. The Takeover.
The Takeover is like had the whole thing.
Yeah, Music Match. That was a good program for its time.
It was for a little while,
What happened to them? Did they get by?
I just went back to Winamp.
Winamp. It really kicks the llama's butt.
Yeah.
They were the number one MP3 player for a little while, short while.
I think Winamp's actually pretty
well.
Yeah, AOL.
For like $270.
And then Nullsoft. And then the culture clash there because the Nullsoft guys were basically hackers.
Yeah.
But now Winamp's still out there. In fact, it's pretty good. A lot of people use it to sync on Windows. Oh, yeah. If you don't want to use
does
iTunes
it play
on
video?
Windows, it plays video. It does podcasts really well. In fact, we're on Winamp. We're featured podcast on Winamp.
Wow, it's changed.
Huh. Yeah. Look at Winamp. They provide us with bandwidth.
I've heard. That's why I've heard their name.
Yeah, see? Yeah, that's a good deal. You provide us with bandwidth. David Prager will know you.
Hook us up, dude. You need the free bandwidth.
I'm going to try to get Zadia a better internet connection. No,
that'd be
do you know
great.
Anybody at Time Warner? That's the question. I know somebody at Audible. Have you? Audible's got a new book out. They did this last year. They did something called Metatropolis. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Was the idea was get these great science fiction authors all together to write a series of novels or novellas, I guess, really kind of long, short stories around a single unified world. So they all came up with a world, and then they wrote Metatropolis. And now there's a new Metatropolis, Metatropolis Cascadia. And it is really good. Written and produced exclusively for digital audio. They were nominated for a Hugo Award last year. It's all about the Pacific Northwest, kind of the new Pacific Northwest in both politically, economically, ecologically. They call it Cascadia. And they have great novelists, Jay Lake, who, of course, has won a Hugo and World Fantasy Award, Mary Robinette Cowell, Tobias Bucknell, Elizabeth Baer. I love her stuff. She's a Hugo Award winner. Carl Schroeder and Ken Scholz. And then, get who they got to narrate this sucker. They got the cast of Star Trek The Next Generation. They've got Rene Auberjonois, Kate Mulgrew, Captain Janeway, Will Wheaton. Yep.
Awesome.
LeVar Burton, Jonathan Frakes, Gates McFadden, Dr. Beverly Crusher. It's kind of fun. In fact, there's a video. If you go to audible.com on the front page, they interview the people who do the voices for this and how they come up with their voices. LeVar's on it. Gates is. It's pretty cool. So here's the deal. Here's the deal. You can download a free story from the original Metatropolis right now and get kind of started in the new Metatropolis if you go to, and this is the first time we've ever told you this link, audible.com. It's only for Twit listeners, so don't tell the folks who listen to Dig Nation. audible.com/meta. Michael Hogan from Battlestar Galactica narrates this one.
Are you? Wait. Is that... Who?
Saul. Saul Tang.
Oh, Saul. Okay, I want.
Oh, I know. It'd be nice. I know who you're talking about.
I want Adama to.
Adama would do. No, Adama does, I think, one of the stories on this.
No way.
Yeah, Captain Adama does one of the stories on this. I think so.
I was just talking about this last night. And yeah. So he would be an awesome.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So check it out. Metatropolis. You can get Metatropolis.
Why don't we have this?
Free.
Audible?
On Dignation.
We do have Audible, but not this particular.
I have a very good relationship with them. They are my friends because I'm a major Audible. You know how long I just celebrated my 9th anniversary as an Audible customer. Wow. That's how long I've been an Audible customer. Nice. Well, it was because I had that long ass commute from here to Tech TV.
Have you authored any books? I mean,
I've read a book. I read a book. It was a short story called Little Golden Riding Hood.
How long ago did you do the VR?
A couple of years ago, I went over to Newark where they are, and they have you know what they're doing with science fiction is they realize that nobody's ever going to pay to get science fiction in audiobooks. It's just there's not enough money. So they built nine audio studios at the Audible headquarters in Newark, and they bring in actors from Broadway and stuff, and they do, and that's why all of these great sci-fi books now. And this is how they did this. This is exclusive for Audible. You can get it just in time for your long holiday weekend. You're going over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house for Thanksgiving. Well, go to audible.com/meta, get that free first story. And as always, you can get the books at two books free by becoming an Audible member, signing up for that platinum plan if you go to audible.com/twit2. So Metatropolis Cascadia, I've been listening to it. It's really, they sent me an advanced copy. It's just really, really great. And do go to the website, audible.com/meta, because there's a lot of content there, videos and so forth. There's synopses, interviews.
Can you plug with all the people? Can you put the audiobooks onto the Kindles? I'm pretty sure you can.
Yes, yeah. They go on the Kindle. You know what's great? With the Ford Sync, you put it on your phone, and then when I get in the car, the book starts. When I get out of the car, it stops, and it's just like it's like there. It's like waiting to That's read awesome. To me. They've got some wallpapers if you want. You can have some Cascadia wallpapers. These are all the people reading. This is really Audible's kind of – I think they do this just for fun.
I can't believe they got all the Star Trek people.
Isn't that cool?
There's a site called watchtrek.com. You can stream every single episode from every season of the original series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager.
Oh, that's legal.
No, I don't know. Well, you can. You can go to it. It's watchtrek.com. I just randomly decided I wanted to watch
sure,
like,
that's
– Dude.
That's the kind of site that if this COECA bill passes, they will no longer exist. They will no longer, they won't even, you couldn't, you would just, they'd be there, but nobody'd be able to find them.
Let me see you the card.
Audible.com/twit2 for two free books. You sign up for the Platinum account. Your first month's free. You can cancel at any time. Those books are yours to keep forever. Audible.com/meta for your first chapter from Metatropolis Cascadia. I love it.
Audible.com. Oh, everyone's hating that I like spilled a secret, I guess.
Is it a secret?
I don't know.
Say it again. Watchtrek.com.
Yeah, it's great.
It cannot be legal.
Oh, I mean, it's, I don't know. I just... Someone like I found it on someone like promoting it on Facebook, and I was like, "Holy crap!"
Shh. Do you think that there are sites like that that people go, "Oh, don't tell anybody because if the powers that be find out, we're out of business."
I think the URL is too valuable. If you had if it was
There's
a little
no
pirate site, you'd
freaking
call it,
way
you'd call
this
it
is legal.
Else.
Watch truck.
Yeah, watch I mean, you can click on any one of those things. You pick any episode from any season. You can full screen it. Quality's
you're
good.
Digging the ditch.
Amazing. I found it on Pirate Bay.
This
no,
is
I'm kidding.
This is by the way, the minute I show 1 second from that website,
your collaborator.
YouTube pulls all our shows.
Oh, interesting.
They do by the way.
Why can't you talk about that? You're not downloading.
It's
it,
no. It's my opinion. This is a news show, and this is absolutely covered by fair use because we're not using it like to sell. We're talking about the news. For instance, I'll do this right now, and this will get this show pulled from YouTube. TSA, security.
Mm-hmm.
They want to search you. Big story, right?
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live did
it. Oh, dude, it's the best. I love
it. It did a little bit on it.
Did you see that?
No, yeah. Live. Watch, this will get us pulled from YouTube.
Feeling lonely this holiday season? Looking for a little human interaction? Do you want to feel contact in certain special places?
Then why not go through security at an airport?
TSA agents are ready and standing by to give you a little something extra to feel thankful about this holiday season.
I like his vacant look.
What are you waiting for? I want to check under your testicles.
Gloves. Spending time with a TSA agent couldn't be easier. Simply book a flight departing from any American airport. When selected for a full body scanner, say no. You'll be pulled aside by a TSA agent, and that's when the fun begins. And you never know who your agent will be.
It could be me.
Or me. Or even me.
But it's probably gonna be us.
I love that.
Would you it's be? Our
business to touch you. So it's gotta be the worst job right now in the world. Right? So I mean, to be a TSA agent, you don't want to tell your friends, your family, anybody. It's just gotta be. Is there anybody? Let's look in the chat.
Oh no, I know someone who's
a TSA agent.
No, someone who got a job by TSA, and they were tweeting about how excited they were that their brother got a job at TSA. And I'm like, clearly it's not someone working. It's somewhere in the not the corporate office, the government office, but. Someone we know.
Really?
Really.
Well, yeah. Dan's girlfriend's brother or something like that. She was like, you got a job at the TSA.
All right. Anybody in the chat room who works for the TSA, you want to step forward and announce yourself right now. This is your chance. There are 1,000. I am Spartacus. No, I am Spartacus. I guess there's nobody in the chat room.
TSA agents were replaced by beautiful people, you know, models. Would you be more willing to?
Absolutely.
To go through?
I'd start hiding stuff down there.
Well, would you rather do that or be the person driving around giving people parking tickets?
That's
not a good job either.
Yeah.
But at least I don't know. I would right now is not a good time to be a TSA agent.
I just say all people should just go, you know, and be free down there.
Where you kill a kilt every time.
Exactly. Be free? You mean go commando? Is that what you're saying?
Go commando every time you go and see how that works out.
Wow. Don't know
I'm joking.
I don't know if I'm ready to do that. Did you know that Blue Water Productions is going to do a Mark Zuckerberg comic? Yeah. A bio comic that's coming out let's see, they announced it in September, coming out pretty soon. Mark Zuckerberg, creator of Facebook. This is Mark's going to like this better than The Social Network. Look at that. Hi.
Oh, man.
I'm Mark Zuckerberg. It premiered Friday. Let's see. Oh, no, the movie premiered Friday. I think this is going to go on sale at comic book stores in December, $6.99. Hi, Mark Zuckerberg. It's not a good likeness, is it?
But The Social Network was the creation of the site, but most of the story was the drama about the guys that wanted to have him help build another site for him. And it was
the Winklevoss. The Winklevoss twins.
Because the whole story, it was even told like it was present day, right. And then they do these
too
flashbacks.
Too many flashbacks.
Not flashbacks. But, well,
that's what I didn't like about the movie. It was too much. It was like deposition, flashback, deposition, flashback. I was sick of it.
The flashbacks were the deposition.
Did you like the movie?
The flash forwards is what they were.
Yeah. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I like Aaron Sorkin. I just, you know, it's funny because you know Mark. I don't know Mark, but I just felt like it was just kind of demeaning of him and of women.
Except,
I mean, boy.
There was one moment that I'm sure Mark probably didn't say it, but I'm sure he, when he saw it, because, you know, I'm sure he saw the movie.
He did see. But
the one moment that he probably said that he probably thought, no, this is some cool shit. It was some cool stuff. Was when he was being deposed and they're asking, do you have my full attention?
Oh, that was the best scene in the movie. They gave him great lines.
The best lines there. And you know, Mark saw that and thought, oh, okay. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. That made him look like a hero. Did you see the movie, Zadie?
I did. I really liked it.
You loved it.
I did. I know that a lot of people had kind of, questions about it, but I thought it actually made me feel like I got a better insight into his character, whether it's Mark or not, you know, just kind of gave
somebody's character. Yeah.
Somebody's character.
Did you kind of feel it was demeaning to women? I mean, all the women, there were two strong female characters. There was a lawyer and his girlfriend, but the rest of them were really just bimbos in that movie.
Yeah. I definitely see the argument there. I guess living in Los Angeles, you kind of tend to have this upper brain attached where you're kind of like, well, it's entertainment. It's a movie.
That's,
you know,
LA.
I'm looking at it. Yeah. It's, you know, the feminist in you kind of sees it as like, yeah, this is kind of, it's bull. There's only one or two strong characters, but at the same time, it's a movie and you kind of have to realize that it is and kind of take it for what it is.
Two stories that'll make us bemoan the future of kids. Nintendo DS, some new games. They're going to, if you can't finish the game or you get to a tough spot, it'll play it for you. You just say, go ahead and play it. And it'll play the tough part.
That sucks.
That is.
Kids
suck.
Today. In my day, we had to play all the deaf levels all the way through.
That's right.
And a great article in the New York Times, Growing Up Digital, Wired for Distraction. Matt Richtel wrote this one, came out in the Sunday Times, today's Times. He talks about Vishal Singh, who is a student in Redwood City, California, 17-year-old. He said his summer reading assignment was Cat's Cradle. He managed 43 pages in 2 months. He said, on YouTube, you can get a whole story in 6 minutes. A book takes so long. I prefer the immediate gratification. Researchers say young people's brains are not rewarded or are rewarded for not staying on task, for jumping to the next thing. The worry is we're raising a generation of kids in front of screens whose brains are going to be wired differently. Your brain's wired differently, Kevin. You grew up in that, right?
Yeah. I think it's worse now. I mean, we didn't have tab browsing when I was growing up.
We didn't have tab browsing when I was a kid.
I mean,
you didn't have IM either, did you? Or did you?
Yeah, there was AIM.
You had AIM?
Okay. Was just starting to come out.
Did you have it running all the time?
None of my friends were on it. When you were a geek back then, you were made
fun
of.
You were alone. Yeah, you were alone.
Yeah, I used to, like, kids would threaten to beat you up in high school if you were into too much into computers.
You didn't band together with the BBS users?
I had some friends that were BBS users, but we were all nerds, dude. Like, if you go back and look at my high school photos, or like my grade school and junior high, like, I'm the biggest dork in the freaking out of the entire class. Like, without a doubt. Like, coming in with my hair all messed up and just didn't even care what I was wearing that day.
Sadi,
like,
were you a geek in high school?
I was very odd. I was twice the height of all of my classmates, which was not very good. And I was never interested in what... I grew up in the South Bronx, and so I was interested in different things than what my friends were usually interested in, which, you know, was cool. I ended up finding my circle, but yes, a strange kid.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'9", 5'10"-ish.
Oh, you're pretty tall.
Yeah.
So now the teachers say, this New York Times article quotes one of the parents. He says, if you're not on top of technology, you're not going to be on top of the world. The parents are saying, get out there and learn about technology. This is the future, isn't it? And yet neuroscientists are a little worried that this generation has just got no attention span.
Yeah, well, they're actually really worried.
It's also less, it's in addition to attention span, I think it's, because the human brain isn't made to multitask as well as people think that they can. So, like, I mean, I think there's been studies that the better you think you are at multitasking, the worse you really are. And
that's right.
Yeah, and they'll look at, like, what it takes for someone to focus between things. So, like, you know, the whole tab browsing thing. If you've got a story, you know, an article you're reading, and then you get an IM, and then you start reading another story, and then you want to leave an email open that you're going to, the amount of total time that you'd spend on doing those three things is going to be significantly higher than if you just did one, then the other, then the other.
Yeah.
You've, Kevin, kind of tried to find peace and quiet and you know, relaxation. That's one of the things they say, Dr. Rich of the Harvard Medical School, downtime is to the brain what sleep is to the body, but kids are in a constant mode of stimulation.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that we've never seen anything like this before. This is the first time that kids are being raised in this world of multitasking. I got a friend of mine is a scientist at UCSF that's studying this, and he's a professor out there, and you should have him on and talk about
multitasking.
Love to. You should, Adam.
Adam, yeah.
Love
to. Brilliant guy. All he does is study attention, and he's really concerned about
it. Is he concerned?
Oh, yeah, he's absolutely concerned. So it's a big deal.
This guy Rich has written a paper. He says he's pushing for the headline. He says is "Bring Back Boredom." He's written a paper called "Finding Huck Finn: Reclaiming Childhood from the River of Electronic Screens." How many screens do we have in this picture? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm surrounded by 14 screens right now.
Yeah. Your iPad.
And you know what? In case I get bored, I got the iPad so I can harvest some crops if you guys don't keep it interesting.
The difference, which I thought was really interesting when I was talking to Adam, is that he was saying that, you know, we have this, and yes, if I have a couple minutes of downtime, I'm pulling up my iPhone and I'm playing like iBasket, or I'm playing a game or whatever.
Right.
But that is something that I learned to do later in life, right? Right.
So it's not, your brain isn't molded in that.
Right, exactly. So we're raising kids that are molded in this constant, always changing environment of multitasking and tab browsing and this and that. And it's like, apparently it's different. It's doing something different to the brain.
Wow.
When you do it from that young of an age. And they're worried, like, will that person ever be able to sit through, you know, a 500-page novel? Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, like there's bigger impacts here than like, we can do that, yes, but we weren't raised the same way that these kids are being raised today.
You still have your iPad, and you know the Angry Birds is still hiding back.
I cannot read a book on my iPad because I know Cut the Rope or Angry Birds is behind there, and I'll be sitting there and I'll read like 15 pages and I'll be like, I'm gonna go play some Cut the Rope, and I love that game. It's a great game, and it's just too hard. It's too hard for me.
That's it's funny. Said. I was at a creative conference.
What?
I said that's what she said, but that was too late. It was.
Go ahead, Zadie.
Sorry, Zadie.
No. I was going to say that.
She's taller than you. She can kick your ass.
I know she can.
Oh no. There was this thing called Creative Women Conference that I was at a couple of weeks ago, and I happened to have lunch with this professor of this arts college here in California, and he was talking about the last 10 years of him teaching and how it's changed, and now how he teaches kids not so much because they all feel like they know more than he does. So what he does now is kind of teach failure and kind of how to give them a place to kind of experiment rather than actually teach them it. So his coursework has changed throughout the years, and he's just found it interesting how it's more about teaching kids to fail and being okay with that, because we are so, you know, multitasking and all that is so prevalent now.
Let's teach him to read and write. How about that? Let's teach him some skills here.
Is it just me, or when I write for more than like 5 minutes now, or even like 2 minutes, my hand starts to hurt?
Oh yeah, forget that.
I'm the same way. I'm like, ouch.
Oh, no.
Go
no,
back
give
to
me
typing.
A keyboard. Yeah, give me a keyboard. Speaking of Angry Birds, sequel on the way from the pig's point of view.
I'm excited for this. This is going to be huge.
I started playing Angry Birds because of you.
And
you're my gateway drug. I had never heard of it. Now I'm playing Cut the Rope. I can't
Cut
stop.
Cut the Rope is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So good.
It's really, these are essentially puzzle games. They're physics puzzle games.
Yeah.
They're really fun.
I just started playing this game Spirits on the iPad. It's like Lemmings, but these little spirits.
Oh, I miss Lemmings. Yeah, I love Lemmings.
Except instead of only walking, if they come to an edge, they'll jump and they're impervious to falling, but there's wind that affects them as well. And you can make some of the actions you can
downloading it right now. Spirits.
Is it an iPad?
It's iPad only right now. And the thing is, if it was iPhone, it might be kind of small. Although,
yeah,
I mean,
if you played
Cut the Rope on the iPhone, you might struggle because you're used to it on the iPad.
And I like it much better on the iPad. The iPad's a pretty cool gaming
Sprite.
Device.
Sprite or Spirits?
Spirits.
I don't see it.
Should be there.
I see Sprite.
Yeah, let me see.
People aren't saying in the chat. They're saying that you're full of it and no such
doesn't
game
exist. It doesn't exist.
Unless they pulled it from the store.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. Angry Birds sequel. Rovio CEO Peter Vesterbacka said the game is going to be available first on all major gaming platforms soon. Not just mobile devices, computers, consoles, everywhere.
Spirits, yeah.
Are you searching for it for iPad? You might be looking on it.
I'm just looking on my iPad for Spirits, but I'll find it. I probably shouldn't install it right now. The sequel will be told from the point of view of the pigs.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, it is interesting. Like, what are the pigs going to use to fight with?
Their brains.
They're going to use to defend.
It'd be cool if you have to defend. Like, you have to build up your fortress.
Oh,
so they have
that's
so many birds
idea.
To throw at you, and you have to defend certain things as
That's awesome.
You know, these two nations... There it is. Spirits for iPad. I'll search
for it. Yeah, they can fight with bacon. That's what somebody in the chat room said.
Bacon. You know, it's true. I like bacon and eggs, so it's just not right. So I want to be part of the both of them. So have you seen this? This is a Israeli video about the peace talks between the birds and the pigs.
Dear friends, after too many years and too many victims, I believe we have reached an agreement that will put an end to the senseless conflict between you. The UN will guarantee the defense of the pigs from any aerial attack, while the birds will get most of their eggs back.
You gotta read the subtitles. It's time to end this struggle which has cost millions of innocent people.
their ability to concentrate in work. Enough with that already. Show some respect. What did I do? What did I do? Stop eating like a pig. What? What was that? Say what? Say what? Back off! Uh-oh. All right, you get the idea.
But this wasn't made by Rogi.
It's all good. You can kind of, you start to understand the birds. That's what's scary. I wish my father were here to witness this moment.
Yeah, you can see the dudes inside of the pigs.
So they end up fighting. He brings out the Angry Birds music all as well. It's pretty funny. Yeah, Erez Nehederet, Israeli for Wonderful Country, a popular live sketch comedy show in Israel. So obviously it's not just the U.S. Israel's also having an Angry Birds epidemic. Amazing. Now, I read an article in, was it Gizmodo, saying, oh, Angry Birds, look at this. This is evidence of fragmentation in the Android market. Look at all the Android phones it doesn't run on. It doesn't run on the old phones. It only runs on the new phones. Big deal. It runs very, by the way, Samsung Galaxy Tab. I should have brought it. Very good Angry Birds platform. A little smaller than the iPad.
Oh.
7 inches.
Interesting. Mm. But it's Android.
It's Android.
That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something that's smaller than...
Oh, I should have brought it. I could show you. It's great. It's great.
I want an Android device, and it's not going to be on my phone. You know, I kind of want that, like,
yeah,
7-inch.
I mean, well, I like the Droid, but I think you would like the 7-inch tablets. I really do.
You can hack the iPhone and install Android OS on it.
So, Mannheim, Germany...
Dual boot. Dual boot your iPhone.
That would be amazing. Zadie knows where I'm going with this, doesn't she? Zadie already knows what I'm talking about. Google Street View. Nobody can explain this picture from Google Street View, but it seems to be a naked man climbing out of his trunk.
And is that like a dog lying on the ground?
And there's a dog lying on the ground.
For no reason.
For no reason. Maybe he's climbing in, climbing out. We don't know. His clothes are on the ground. It seems
what
to.
What is that next to the car? What
I don't
is
know,
that?
Orange juice or gasoline? I don't know. A broken umbrella is apparently there.
I think there's people that see a Google Street View car.
I think
many blocks away. Many
they
blocks away. And they're like,
it.
Dude, go home and do like, let's set something up cool and let's try and get in there.
The smartest. You've done that before?
No, when I was on the freeway, I was following one and I was just like flipping them off and stuff in case they like. Ever put it on Street View because then I can go and see myself.
You're just jealous because Patrick Norton got caught by Street View on Street
Did
View.
He? And,
oh, yeah.
But that was years ago, actually.
Years ago, going into
still pixelated. You could barely recognize it.
DLTV, what, years ago?
That's funny.
I think here's what Google, listen to me. I know what I'm talking about. They should put out ahead of time a schedule. You'd have much more interesting Street View.
For sure.
You just say, hey, we're coming to your town. We'll be there 3 o'clock. God. Have fun. Knock yourself out. Don't you think
that would be interesting?
Wouldn't that be good?
It'd be fun to like go in on a place and then be able to jump back through time, like have like a timeline,
right?
And so you could be like, okay, show me this street when Mardi Gras is going on in this year or something like that. That could be
I'm sure.
Crazy.
I mean, all of it's archived the same way. I mean, there's going to be a Google Street View, like what's the site that shows the Wayback Machine, but for Google Street View in the future, you'll be able to do that.
For
that
sure.
Might be interesting.
Flip through it.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah,
cool. One last story, and then we're going to get going. Reed Hastings, CEO of Netflix, points out that nobody is watching the movies on the iPad, the iPhone, the portable devices. He says there isn't any appetite on small devices for long-form video.
He's got the data to back that
and
up.
He's got,
at least as far as the long-form content like movies. I bet you there's some people watching on iPads. Well, if you're at home, don't watch it on your
iPad.
Knows.
See,
that's
he knows,
for streaming.
Though.
Yeah. People will watch movies on the iPad, I think, but maybe not through Netflix because you might be on a plane somewhere. You might be traveling somewhere where you're not able to stream the movie to your iPad. And maybe that's
the
why
battery
they don't have
life.
People
you're concerned about
it.
Battery life also, right?
He says
if you're at home, then don't stream on your iPad. Stream on something better in terms of the display.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
The only thing I stream on a regular basis are NFL games to my iPhone when I'm at the gym. Because that way I can watch DirecTV, boom, watch the NFL game because they have wireless at my gym.
Well, what he's saying, which is kind of interesting, by putting Netflix on the Xbox, PS3, and Mac, that increased its subscriber base. They got more Netflix users. But he said coming to the iPhone and iPad had negligible impact on the business at all.
Hmm.
At all.
I wonder if that'll change. I kind of find myself watching movies, you know, right before I'm going to bed. I will turn on Netflix or Hulu on my iPhone and watch a little bit of it. So I don't know if that'll change once the battery life does get better.
It's kind of sad. I just see Zadie curled up, pillow, little tiny iPhone,
Just watching a little sad little movie.
It's quite sad, actually.
All alone, a tear falling from her eye. At least I have this little iPhone.
Keeps me warm.
You can follow Zadie on Twitter at Z-A-D-I. And, of course, epicfoo.com is her web video. So good to have you on, finally. I really apologize for not getting you on sooner.
I apologize for Time Warner Cable, but thank you.
No need. We'll have you back. And next time, just come up to the cottage. Then we won't have to worry about you freezing and dying.
I would love that.
We'll keep the heat on. Kevin Rose, of course, is at DigNation, dig.com, KevinRose.com. You're doing that great show with Tim Ferriss. I like
the
that.
Random show.
You got a new show coming out, right?
I do.
You want to debut that here?
It's basically what I really want to do is I get to meet all these really cool entrepreneurs.
Right.
And I would like to sit down with them over tea and just talk about the creative side of what they're building.
Oh, cool.
Because, you know, they go on air and they talk about, you know, where will Twitter be 5 years from now or whatever it may be. But I want to get into, like, how they actually come up with the ideas for features
that.
And things like that.
You could call it This Week in Startups. I understand that's available.
Is it available? Did he stop doing the show?
Yeah, sure he did.
No, he did not.
I don't think you can copyright
no,
a title.
Jason's show, I've watched it. It's a little, it's quite a bit different than what I want to get to.
I love the idea of getting into it and finding out. I would watch that like crazy. I would love, because to me, the process is what's very interesting. And these are the smartest people in our culture, in our society right now. They're doing very interesting things.
It should be fun.
I'd love to do that. So will that be at KevinRose.com?
Yeah, I'm basically going to put up the videos on my site. I was going to call the show Forward. But I've come up with a different name for
it. Oh, good.
So.
When do you think the first one?
I'm hoping January 1st.
Okay, beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
We will look for that. He's also Kevin Rose on Twitter. Yes. David Prager is the heart and soul of Revision 3. There would be no Revision 3 if there were not a D.L. Prager.
Thank you.
Anything you want to talk about? Got anything exciting coming up? Any employees I can poach?
Yeah, right. No, things are going. We're having a really great time where we've been scaling our ad sales team really well and being
you
able.
You got
to
the best guy in the business, Brad
out,
Murphy,
like,
working.
People,
for
people
you.
In the chat room were talking about HD Nation going away, and they're all upset about that.
No, it's and not. HD, it's part HD, of Techzilla.
Yeah, so like basically, it's the full content of that, but we're going to double the output of Techzilla, and within that, will
that's
be
the way
HD
to do
Nation.
It.
Yeah, because I've
I
always
love
been
Robert,
about
and
that.
I love yeah. I love Patrick, and I think them together, it's a great show. That's the way it ought to be. Thank you, David. Thank you, chat room, for not being too mean. Thank you all for being here. We are doing a best of Twit for the week after Christmas. So if you go to twit.tv/best of and just let us know what were your favorite shows, not only for Twit, but for Twig, Mac Break Weekly, Net at Night. We're taking care of all of them. As I mentioned, Gary Vaynerchuk is on for our 1 hour special interview, our Twit Talks, 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern at live.twit.tv this Wednesday. Tom Merritt and I will get to talk to him. And our Tron special, Sarah Lane's Tron special, she went down to the special effects. What's it? What's the name of the special effects place that she went to? Is it PDI? I can't remember. Anyway, is debuting this Tuesday. So just in time for your Thanksgiving at youtube.com/twit unless they pull it for indecent exposure. I thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can.
Doing the Twit.
Doing the Twit.
All right.
Doing the Twit, baby.
Doing the Twit.
All right.
Doing the Twit, baby.